Blog Talk Radio.
We're shy of one horse.
You brought two too many.
Thank you.
Show number 1,394, I believe. I had to double check that. I don't know. I've been so busy having to get this music stuff done that I'm not taking care of the count, but my assistant, Lanolin, should be able to handle that. Welcome as we get ready to sit down for another 2 hours of good food for thought, courtesy of your loving mad scientist here at Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis, singer of DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is good to have you in the house. Soul Tree Radio in the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Assassins of the Black Athlete Sports Network. You know, all the good shit. The who, what, when, where, why, and how, right now, at www.BASNNewsroom, all one phrase, .com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network, wherever they may be, Radio Reggie in Richmond, Virginia, the Orlando Ledbetter and Sonic Cheryl Jones in Philadelphia, Pat Freeman, the Mighty Oba, doing this thing, doing really well with his first book, The Art of the Interview, Book One, up in Western New York, taking care of Rochester, Buffalo, and parts therein. And, of course, the bad man from the East Bay, Gary Norris Gray. What up, Jay?
Where have you gone, Oakland A's? Oakland A's? Oakland A's? Where have you gone?
Uh-oh.
Oakland A's. Michael?
Yes, sir.
I am not happy with Bob Brenney. You know, Bob Brenney was a member of the San Francisco Giants.
Okay.
Bob Brenney is a bubba. Respect this.
Okay.
The San Francisco Giants have many, many bubbas in their past.
Show enough.
Will Clark is a bubba.
Yes, he is. He's been a bubba for
Bob
a long
Brenney
time.
Is a bubba.
Okay, I didn't know that.
That fool who tried to fight, tried to have a fight with Barry Bonds. He's
oh,
a
Jeff Kent. Yes, he's a bum. Mm-hmm.
Now, Bob Brenney, it'd be funny last night when the New York Mets were playing the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Okay.
What he said was, Mr. Marcus Stroman and his new rag.
Yep.
Look good with Tom Seaver. Now, if I'm Marcus Stroman, I'm going up to the broadcasting booth.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. Okay. If I got this right, you're saying Brenley said something about Marcus Stroman's do-rag?
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. On the air on D-Bad Radio.
Wow. Let me tag into the Mets fan in the mix here. Tony, what happened?
Well, basically, I guess there was, you know, in a general game or whatever, and there was they was doing some yapping, him and this other, I forget the kid's name, and somehow or another, Brenley said, well, I'm sure that's the same do-rag that Tom Seaver used to wear. And, you know, he was trying, you know, it's that old, you know.
He kissed that.
I am not happy with this because it continues to stop.
No, it's one of those, you know, hell hath no fury, like a mildly pissed off white person, so to speak, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Now he was, I mean, Marcus was having his way with the D-backs early on, and right after that little incident, it looks like he lost his edge because then he left a he left a curveball over the plate the next inning that I think just landed about 5 minutes ago. Even though we were playing indoors. It's the little things and mm-hmm. it goes back to one of our feature articles on BASN Newsroom which we just posted. You know, this is just another the mildly peeved white folks who still, you know, don't want to, that still have a problem with other minorities, you know, whether it's a catcher that hits a mm-hmm. home run off of yep. a converted infielder pitching mop-up duty. Oh, he's not Come supposed on. To hit a home run on a 3-0 count. And, of course, his exactly. manager then throws him under the bus on top of that.
But of course.
As much as I love baseball, I give up on the quote unquote baseball intelligence here because they're never gonna.
We got Radio Reggie in the mix as well. And hold on a sec, G. Reggie, how much do you buy into this rule book or unwritten rules that baseball's still trying to push?
Well, number one, peace and blessing. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Deacons for Defense of Justice and Nazarene Warriors in the struggle. What I see, first of all, baseball winds the baseball type so the chicks can get the long ball, and then they start hitting them out the park. Oh, by the way, mm-hmm. when they used to take uppers back in the 70s when a certain Charlie Hustle was out there playing, it was okay as long as they had 170 games to play in 85, 90 degree, sometimes 100 degree heat. Then we fast forward now. Well, we have to make the mound higher because we can't have these guys hitting home runs all the time. Now we have no hitters, and everybody like, oh, well, another no hitter, no big deal. Baseball is not geared to the millenniums, and when you sit for 3.5-4 hours, after the first 30 minutes or either 25 minutes, you lost it. And also, gentlemen, if you look at the different ways you can view sports from your TV to your phone to the Internet, a lot of their numbers are being falsely equated. So that's why baseball really needs to start getting with the times and start to track in a better way.
Well, to be fair, Reg, in that vein, pushing the game in certain areas, that's something they do. I mean, ironically, today's Met D-back game is one of the handful of games that they put on YouTube. They do a YouTube game of the week every week, and it just happened to be the Met game today.
See,
the thing is, right after the NBA, they were the first ones to start putting games online. You know, even the lordly NFL took a while before they, realized that, hey, we could push the game, different ways or whatever. Now, baseball sort of stumbled on it because, they still try to push, the Asian market, the Latino market, every market, mm-hmm. but here, remember during that period of time when they were starting opening day over in Japan or in London or whatever.
Three years in a row.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And see, baseball sort of talks out of both sides of its asshole at times because they want to throw tradition in certain ways, but then mm-hmm. they want to get away. Now, thankfully, they allow opening day to be opening day still. I think the only time over the last few years where they changed it and. Mm-hmm. For the most part, I did not have a problem with it because they were honoring one of the game's best players, and that was Ichiro. Basically, Ichiro's final three games were played over in Japan. And
cool.
I was like, okay, I can get that.
That was marketing. But see,
when they really want to, they can. And again, I would, I'm going to pat Gary's back, even though he won't do it himself here, but I would implore anybody to go to our website and read Gary's story, Baseball Being Baseball 2021, and it just hits all the crazy things. See, look, I have already said I'm a lost cause. I'm, you know, me and the 13 other black folks that do watch baseball on a daily basis. We're lost causes. We're not going to, you know, we've thrown up our hands and what have you. But
Tony,
yes, sir.
Black guy on line two. That makes it 14. I'm sorry.
I know we're in deep conversation with a guy in Schenectady, but he's a comic book guy too. So it's like,
But Tony, I want to throw this at you, Tony. Okay, we know about Greg.
I have a question for Tony. See, the thing about baseball. Baseball refuses to look into the mirror. What I mean is this. You had Tony La Russa, who did not want to admit that Canseco and McGuire were taking steroids.
Oh, no,
what's wrong with you?
Well, one, he's never going to, you know, push away. There's a better chance of me becoming commissioner of baseball than him admitting that those guys were taking steroids. But see, also, look, Tony La Russa is sort of part of the problem because, see, the White Sox are on the verge of being a great team.
Yes.
You know, I picked them to go to the World Series last year, and of course, White Sox fans haven't forgiven me for doing that. But
when you got a drunk as a manager, what do you expect?
Yeah. But the thing is, they've taken. You know, this was a team that I think took a step back by bringing in a guy like La Russa.
Yes.
You know,
this
wasn't bringing in Dick Vermeil. You know, after he had been in. You know, at least Dick Vermeil was still involved in the game as a broadcaster or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yes, Tony La Russa was working in Arizona, in the front office. But you know he shouldn't be managing that team right now. And again,
you go talking about the alcoholic now. How dare you? So he
didn't
know the rules that you put in second.
I didn't say a word about
putting a man on second base and went extra innings. So what?
You know,
he had a couple of shots.
I made it a point not to mention that he was 75 proof, but you know that's sort of speaks for itself.
Holy, I gotta write that shit down. T, he was 75.
But see, the thing about it is, Tony La Russa, and yes, you know he's won World Series. He's been a successful manager over the years.
How long ago
like that?
Was
I get that. I think Johnson was in office at the time. I'm not sure if it was Andrew or LBJ, but
you
it
know,
was
right. he probably
how long
was, ago
was
that?
It was a Carter.
But you know what, Gary? Reggie makes a good point. Look, when the Bash brothers were getting busted for having tainted situations, nobody ever knocked on La Russa's door and said, "You got some splaining to do." He was never taking the task for the bad things.
No, yes, Michael, he was asked three times.
He was never taking the task. They didn't put no pressure on like they did Naomi Osaka. But here's my thing, gentlemen. Okay, remember when we talked about Metropolitan Baseball Little League with Bill Foster? Now, we knew, and this is what's happening now, when you had certain leadership that was more interested in going overseas and giving young kids tranquilizer pills for steroids to build them up, and, oh, by the way, a contract for a Mexican kid is $5,000 or $10,000, well, you might have to pay $1 million. So for an American kid, black or white, they don't care. So as long as we can go ahead and get cheap labor, slave labor, we ain't got to worry about paying the big bill. And by the way,
who's
their agent?
And that's been and see, that's been a longstanding thing since they infiltrated the Negro Leagues. Because you know, only a hand, you have to remember, only a handful of players who were stolen from those Negro League rosters. Very few of those teams got compensated. Matter of fact, truth be told, Larry Doby almost wasn't the first player to play in the American League because Effa Manley, the then owner of the Newark Eagles, was saying, "You're taking away one of our best players. You need to compensate us financially."
Yeah.
And Bill Vec said, "Okay, you're right." And he was one of the few owners that that compensated. You remember? The Dodgers never gave the Kansas City Monarchs any money for Jackie Robinson.
I think
I've told this story before, but it bears repeating several times. Back in the day, in the early 80s, the Texas Rangers signed a 16-year-old kid out of San Pedro de Macorís. From the Dominican. Player went on to be a 30-30 guy, prolific slugger, questionably, and all other stuff. And that player wound up being Sammy Sosa.
Yep.
Now,
who looks
when
like
Sammy signed, when Sammy signed, he was given a $5,000 signing bonus.
That was a black Sammy Sosa, right?
He was then. Apparently, Sammy has a marketing deal with Crayola Crayons, but I can't really. The reason why I bring it up is when Jackie Robinson signed with the Brooklyn Dodgers, he was also given a $5,000 signing bonus. Now, when he signed that professional contract with the then Brooklyn Dodgers, he was given a $5,000 signing bonus. And then, some odd years later, as a 16-year-old, Sammy Sosa basically gets that same contract. And see, here's the irony of it. The man who discovered Sammy, so to speak, or one of the guys, was a scout for the Texas Rangers by the name of Omar Minaya.
Baseball
has always done the whole thing with the cheap labor, but they could see you got to remember. Think of all the great Latino ball players. There's very, very few of them that have actually been drafted. Manny Ramirez was drafted. Out of Washington Heights, of course, Michael, and of course, A-Rod. Drafted out of Miami. Carlos Correa, number one pick overall. But many of your Hall of Fame players, David Ortiz. Free agent. Roberto Clemente, free agent. Mariano Rivera, free agent. Orlando Cepeda, free agent. The entire Alou family, free agent. I wish I was joking, but it's the truth. As we've gotten closer to mind, you've seen a few more get drafted, but for the most part, it's cheap labor. The only Gary Sheffield said it best. One of the reasons why they go after Dominican ball players is because they know that they won't won't really
docile.
Yeah, I think
docile was the word.
There's a mentality. There's always been a mentality, whether it be whether you were a player born here with Latino heritage, or more so back over on the island. You know, there's a, you know,
yep.
you just want to get the chance. You know, there's a whole phrase. One of the reasons why Latino ball players, quote unquote, and again, this was something that was started, you know, that was said years and years ago, why, quote unquote, Latino players are always free swingers. You can't walk off the island, bro. Gotta come hitting.
Hey, Mike, I'm tired of y'all giving me an ass whooping. It's 116 to 100 with 635 to go.
You know, don't take that ass whooping personally. We're just trying to take care of business.
I'm tired of this shit, man. You don't have to get swear, and that's what's so far in my ass. I can cough it to you.
Well, let me also add, at the half-hour point, we're going to be visited by our darling Jennifer Thibodeau-Bork, who will be doing bloodlines and analysis for the Belmont Stakes.
We
got the horse right here.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Mike, make sure she does her over under steroid use of the horses.
Oh, that's cold.
Mike. The biggest thing is you know, we're going to be talking about sweaty animals. And, oh, by the way, we're going to be talking about horses, too.
That's true. We're also going to talk about our little sister, Naomi Osaka, and what she's going through. And the fact
they changed the rules.
Everybody, well, you know what? It's amazing when you have stroke. When Tiger had stroke, he abused it because he really didn't understand what kind of power he had. Naomi is a very intensive young lady. She knows who she is, and this is why we should be concerned for her and want her to do well, because she's trying to fight off a lot of shit that maybe a lot of athletes before her.
But Mike, I got to say this. When Nike and first of all, the young lady has already made $51 million in endorsements. That's number one. Number two, when that bastard stood up and said, well, these four young ladies are in their obligations, that's a piece of shit guy in front of a press conference and wouldn't take fucking questions.
Hold it, Greg.
This part that made me laugh was that when Billie Jean King and former athletes got together and went to her side, all of a sudden the people bitched up, and she said, okay, fuck all y'all. I'm going to pull out the French Open and kiss my ass. I'm out of here.
Now you know what? The best thing that's out there right now, if you go to YouTube and Google Venus Williams, she basically lets her know that she has her back, and even more so. And that's the great thing here. And, you know, other than Billie Jean and the Williams sisters, there hasn't been too many, you know, her other brethren have been very, very, you know, put it this way. Yeah. There are church mice that are saying, y'all ain't going to say nothing? They literally turned into Nino Brown. It's like, ain't nobody know nothing?
Guess what? When he took that sword out the hand, they said, hey, wait a minute, we can get a piece of action. We better start saying something. This is the money thing right here. We better get with the program.
Here's the thing. The thing that's kind of sad is, and it's sad, but it's predictable. They don't realize that that's the face of the future of women's tennis is Osaka.
Well, they understand it. This is their way of trying to mess with the lady's head, because she's solid everywhere
else.
Messing
with the wrong one.
And because she's number one now, she's under a level of scrutiny that nobody in her sport in recent years, save the Williams women, has gone under. And it would make sense that the Williams women would look to comfort her, or at the very least counsel her, knowing that they've been through this shit. But I want to get back into that later, because our colleague is here from Southwest Louisiana in Cajun country. my little sis Jennifer Thibodeau Bork, ready to talk a little hearts. Jenny, can you hear us?
Mr. Ed on line two.
I think Jenny, I think you scratched that last one, Jenny.
Yeah. And yes, they are giving.
I got a loaded carrot.
Way too much crap.
Jenny, I gave a horse a loaded carrot.
I'm sorry, Mike.
Yes, you should be. Okay, so now we got the Belmont Stakes coming up this Friday, or Saturday rather, and we got some drama here. In spite of the fact that there will not be a Triple Crown horse, we've got probably one of the more competitive fields than it's been in recent years. We've got a horse who won the Preakness in Ron Bauer, who won the last race, Hot Rod Charlie, who was right there in the Kentucky Derby before he got outgamed by Medina Spirit, Known Agenda, who has won a couple of grade twos on his way here, and the Super Horse, who bombed the tote at 72-1, Todd Pletcher and Bourbonic. Smith, what happens now that you got a smaller field but a longer distance as the Belmont is going back to a mile and a half?
Oh, that, it's a marathon. This is where it's going to separate the men from the boys, so to speak.
Yep.
You know, it's going to weed them out. If they can't go the distance, they're going to fall off pretty damn quick.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, though, even the ones that can go the distance, if they burn off too much speed in the beginning, they're not going to have enough left in the tank to get to the end.
Exactly.
So there's going to be a lot of skill coming into play. Training is going to come into play. Because if all they've been doing is training these horses to sprint and they haven't been training any of them to go some distance, then it's going to show.
Hmm. You talk about bloodlines all the time as being the blueprint, and you said one of the best bred horses in this year's Triple Crown mix was Essential Quality. But
yep.
He didn't do what he was expected to do. He's going to be the 2-1 favorite in all likelihood in Morning Line on Saturday. What do you like about him and what don't you like about him?
He's a nice-looking horse. He's performed mm-hmm. well so far, except in the Derby where he really did bomb when he shouldn't have. Maybe it was an off day. Athletes have bad days, and horses are no exception. Now, if he bombs again this weekend, then we're going to know his name does not match
mm-hmm.
what he produced. Now, he could win. He's got the skill, obviously. But was the Derby, was it a bad day for him? Or was that
mm-hmm.
the best he got? So
yeah.
Time is going to tell, but we're going to find out. And in all honesty, if he doesn't do very well, he's not, you know, if he doesn't put a good show for Saturday, he's not going to get a whole lot of attention in the breeding show.
Yeah. Since it came up that Medina Spirit was officially caught riding dirty, and New York has banned Bob Baffert from doing anything here, which is a big deal because, New York for a season, it's their turn in the barrel. Of course, Churchill and other tracks won't matter until later on in the year after the Derby's over. So what does this say about what they think or what you believe they found regarding Baffert and how he's been doing things with horses?
Well, and it's like we were discussing earlier. Could he be playing dirty? Of course. That's
mm-hmm.
always a possibility. That's always a very real possibility. When you're talking about the kind of money that's on the table in this kind of sport, there's going to be those that are going to try to cheat the system. They're going to get as close to the line as they possibly can and hope to not go over
mm-hmm.
so that they can. Everybody wants that edge. And that's
yes.
okay, as long as you don't cross over that line. Now, could he honestly be cheating? Of course. Could he just be trying to ride the line and he got too close and he went over a little bit? Yeah. both scenarios are equally possible. And that's
Jenny, what does
the
it
hard
mean?
Part.
What does it mean to the outside world for a guy like Baffert or Cox, who is the trainer on Essential Quality, to have a high-quality horse that's expected to win? Where's the blowback with all of that, especially when it comes to betting?
Oh, there's a lot of money riding on it because an animal that should have, you know, placed well, should have showed well, didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it could have been an off day, but if people were betting on him to win, especially if they were paying high dollars, they lost some money. And that's
no
one thing
about
that. The horse racing that I don't like is that there's so much money involved, it takes away from the sport itself. Because a lot of people are focused only on
yeah.
the betting side of it and not the actual racing itself.
Yeah, but Jen, I got a question for you, Jenny. We've seen illegal activities in horse racing ever since they had racing. That's nothing new. And it's been big money. That's why you have a certain owner down there in California that's riding dirty with all kind of horses. I don't know what that noise
yep.
is, but I don't know.
Like,
can y'all hear that?
Getting
I don't know where
that's
coming from.
Ain't no telling. And it's like I said, everybody, every trainer, every jockey, every owner is trying to stack the deck in their favor. On your small, fast little bush track, they will use shock devices, you know, all manner of underhanded things to get their horses over the finish line first. You can't really do that in these big tracks because all the cameras, you will get caught.
Right. Well, what was the situation on the horses getting killed down in California? What was the situation with that track in California where a lot of horses were getting injured and had to be euthanized?
West Santa Anita.
Oh, and that
yeah, what
is,
happened,
and that
happened with that track?
Anita.
That
yeah.
is still going on. I don't know
what
is
wrong. What was the problem with the track? Was it a track or what was going on?
It's a trainer.
That many horses getting killed?
It's hard to say. But the number of deaths, especially with as many horses as they have, people that aren't paying attention to it are not going to look all that bad. But these injuries should not be occurring, not at this level and not this many. There's going to, you know, no matter, the more horses you have, the more likelihood there's an injury that will happen. That's a given. You know, that's just like, you know, running track X amount of time. Sooner or later, you're going to get injured. It's going to
right.
happen. There's nothing you can do about it.
And how much of a factor did COVID play in this as well?
This was the problems at Santa Anita were happening before COVID hit.
Oh, okay.
And the track did slow down because of COVID. But the deaths don't seem to have correlated with that either. That seems to have stayed on a steady trend. If I were a trainer, if I had a horse, I would be very leery and wary. You know, careful exercising my horse. Don't do it too often. Do it enough, but not too often.
Right.
I would be hesitant. You've got tracks that dwarf Santa Anita. They make Santa Anita look like a little bush track over in Japan. They run more horses. They run a larger schedule, and it's much more involved. And they're not seeing injuries like what Santa Anita's doing. For all the world, they're a lot bigger. And that's what gets my attention. You know, and that's not to say the Japanese don't have their issues with their horse industry either, because
absolutely.
But there is something that they are doing when it comes to the training and their track that we are not. And theirs, on its face, looks superior to ours.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, personally, if, you know, Santa Anita were smart, they might want to take a look over at what Japan is doing and try to figure out where they're going wrong to try to fix it.
The Breeders' Cup is not out there this year again, is it? or is it somewhere else?
Ooh, that I don't know.
I don't think they've determined yet, although they're probably leaning toward Japan or Canada. They did a Breeders' Cup a few years ago up at Woodbine in Rexdale, Ontario,
ooh,
and Woodbine did a great job with handling the whole affair. They've been really above what is being done in the States because they've taken care of the horse owners. In doing so, they allowed for bigger pools, bigger pots, more horses being born stable. So there's a huge colony of racers at Woodbine. And it's a longer meet than most of the other tracks, at least in the Northeast. And when Woodbine is finished, many of those jockeys come down where Jenny is down there in New Orleans way and ride Fairgrounds and other
the Evangeline's
yep,
down there, there, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep, Evangeline and Delta. Down here, we don't run just thoroughbred. We have a thoroughbred season and we have a quarter horse season. Down here, we race quarter horses as well. And like, and it's a little, you know, it's a little quarter mile, and that's what they race.
Jenny, for folks, for the outsiders, what's, you'll let everybody know, what's the subtle difference between the thoroughbreds and the quarter horses?
Okay, and one thing a lot of newcomers don't understand is thoroughbreds were used to develop quarter horses.
Oh.
And you will have, you know, what they call an appendix quarter horse. That is actually thoroughbred or half thoroughbred. That's allowed to race with other quarter horses. Matter of fact, one of the top racing quarter horses was a thoroughbred by the name of Three Bars that had enough of the physical characteristics of a quarter horse to be listed in the quarter horse stud book. And with him, you also had Easy Jet, which was another top runner, and Two-Eyed Jack. And Dash for Cash. And you're going to see a lot of barrel racing horses with those quarter horse bloodlines that are heavy on the thoroughbred side for that added speed. And like with Churchill and all that, they run strictly thoroughbred racing. That's it. Down here, we run a thoroughbred season, hotly followed by a quarter horse season. And there is a little bit of an overlap. So
makes
for
sense.
Almost 6 months of the year, we're racing horses down here.
Oh.
And there's also a couple of tracks throughout the U.S., you know, the smaller tracks, even smaller than Evangeline Downs, where they actually race Appaloosa horses. And in some places, they actually even race mules. And it's very competitive. When you get out in the rural areas, you will see ingenuity.
Yeah, really.
Now, they will find a way.
I like that. Yes. Mhm. This particular race, this Belmont Stakes, Jenny, we got a little bit of a different situation now because we got a much smaller field. We got 8 horses, so there's least likely to be a traffic problem. So, from a tactician standpoint, what favors anybody who's going to win this race? What do you expect them to have?
There will literally be nowhere to hide. Nowhere. They are going to be on their own. This is as small as this field is going to be. They're going to have to put up or shut up because there's not going to be any kind of an excuse as to why you didn't do well. Because that small of a field, you know, can you get boxed in? Yeah. But with only 8 horses, you might get boxed in, but you should still have some room to maneuver to be able to get around, even if you have to go on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And Lord knows you've got the distance to do it.
Yes.
But it's going to be timing it and not burning out your animal when you get to the end.
I'm glad you said timing because timing is the key. Many jockeys made their reputations on being able to know just exactly when to make the move and send the horse. I'm dating myself now, but one of the best jockeys able to do that was Jorge Velasquez. He had what was called the clock, where he could time exactly what time he had to send his horse, if he knew he had horse, to go. We saw that
in the... And you can't second-guess yourself.
No. And we saw that in the Wood Memorial, when Kendrick Carmouche sent Bourbonic, who was the one horse in this race, to the post, took him in stretch, took him six wide, and at 72-1, he got up a full stride in time to hit the tote board and pay big balloons.
Yep.
This is the kind of race that smells a closer, might have a factor in it, because Belmont, unlike other racetracks, has that long backstretch.
Oh, it's a killer.
1,200 yards.
It goes on forever.
Mm.
Yes. So,
and for all
to
the
be
world,
on the lead.
Still under 3 minutes.
Yeah.
But that's going
to
be the longest
be the
3 minutes of your life.
To be on the lead, you got to have some serious horsepower. As the way we see it thus far in this race, we got two legitimate closers in Bourbonic and the number 8 horse, Overtook. And both of these horses are trained by Todd Pletcher. So like I said, this is one of these turf areas now. Pletcher, he's New York, and he's expecting to do well because he's got 3 horses in the race, Overtook, Bourbonic, and No Agenda. So don't be surprised if there's some strategic race riding in the midst of all of this. The Central Quality is supposed to be the real purebred in this bunch, but didn't fire, and Hot Rod Charlie, he ran okay in the Derby, but he ended up 3rd. So with only 8 horses, I'm thinking this room for a closer or 2, and I'm expecting Overtook and Bourbonic to hit that long back stretch and come out and generate some horsepower, and I think both of them will get to the wire. Whoever comes up 1st or 2nd, that I can't say, but I like Bourbonic a little better because Carmouche did the do already.
And we don't, down here, we don't sleep on a Cajun jockey. They will make you eat your lunch real quick. they're small by birth, and let me tell you, they can ride almost anything. I mean, you could probably give Carmouche a plug plow mule, and he'll make that sucker win.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and Carmouche has done really well. Yep. He has done really well over the last couple of years. He's only in his mid-30s, which is young for a jockey. He's got a good decade left in him. So
he's
just maybe getting on the beginning of a good thing.
I would love to see him in the winner's circle. I really would. I cannot tell a lie on that one. I am always going to root for a home guy. Always.
Well, if you see number 1 in the winner's circle, you better go to the cash window because that's where we're going to go, because that's who we're riding with to win this bad boy. everything that Jenny said, I think he's got the best shot with the best horse right now for the track that they have.
And with it being a small field too, I would guess that probably plays like you were saying before, probably plays into it as well.
Yes, makes
There's
it even better.
Be hardly any traffic.
Mm-hmm. Jenny, tell them from a bloodline standpoint why. I mean, AP Indies, I believe, have always been bred for stamina.
Oh yeah, because those are the lines that produce Secretariat.
Mm-hmm.
That goes straight back to Secretariat and his lineage. And it's trying to recapture that flash in the pan. You know, and all of these horses all are related in one way or another. They're all coming off of the same basic bloodline. So there's quality there. Now, who's going to be the better one? You know, and it's the same game in almost every single race. The blood, you know, the names of the horses and the looks change a little bit, but all of the bloodlines are all along the same line. Everybody's trying to recreate Triple Crown winners. So that's why you see a lot of the same bloodlines in all of the horses. You know, you got 15 horses, and 9 times out of 10, all 18 horses are going to share at least 3 family members across
Sound
the
like the Maury
you
show.
You got something that more related than us?
You are
right
in the last quarter, he just runs off the court and everything.
And there is a lot of line breeding that goes on. So those trees don't really branch a whole lot. They're more like a little, you know, it's more of along the lines of a sapling.
Mm-hmm.
A little spike buck. But it works. especially when you hit that Nick that created Secretariat. So it's
Jenny,
you know, keeping those lines together without getting too close.
After this race, Jenny, what do you think is going to happen to Baffert? Because once the Triple Crown stuff has died down, they're going to get back to business.
Oh, you can bet there's going to be some serious talking about what kind of punishments they're going to dole out on it. Because I'm sure there's probably going to be some sanctions coming.
Yeah.
Now, if this just carries on and they really don't do anything to him, I won't be surprised. I will not be the least bit surprised. But I won't be shocked if they do give him some kind of punishment. So
well, they got
kind of odd that both of these horses were each given three tests for the Preakness, and both of them tested clean on all the tests, from what I'm seeing. So it's kind of odd, you know, to sanction him when he tested clean for the Preakness on both animals. But maybe that's
just curious to see. Yeah, but between now and the Breeders' Cup, after this race is over, you're talking about a good 3-4 month difference in time. What do you think will be done beneath the scenes rather than out in front? Because thoroughbred racing really doesn't get much in the calendar over the course of a year except for these two times. So what do you think ultimately will happen? He's already banned in New York. Will they ban Baffert in other states, do you think?
Well, and especially with the Breeders' Cup coming up, because that race, you know, that's the name. You know, this is for breeders. You know, this is to show your stock, you know, their potential for breeding, and what you produce.
Yeah, that's their Super Bowl.
You know, to keep them out of there.
That's
it's
right.
Yeah, that's their Super. We make a big thing about the Triple Crown horses, the Triple Crown races, but the Breeders' Cup, that's, like you said, that's where careers are made or broken, because of how the way they do it those 2 days.
Yeah. And there's a lot more races in the Breeders' Cup. There's a wider spread.
Mm-hmm.
You got 2-year-olds, your 3-year-olds, your 4-year-olds. You got all of that. You got fillies, you've got colts, and you're looking at it from every angle. So it's past producers, from Triple Crowns in the past, Justify, Pharaoh, and all of them. They've all got stock running in the Breeders' Cup this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly.
So this is where you get to see what their offspring are doing, and that's where you start separating everything out. Can they recreate what they did?
Jenny, will they get that money back to the people? Everybody's gone.
Wait, say that again.
Will they give the money back from the Kentucky Derby?
They ain't get their money back.
There's a better chance of Trump paying his taxes than them getting that money back.
You ain't lying.
I got a better shot at growing to be 10 foot tall than them refunding that money. I don't even make 5 foot, so I know I ain't making it to 10. It is not.
But Gary brings up a good point, though, because the horse who should have been DQ'd and pushed up, and everybody that bet on him, and that includes all the exotics tickets, win place show, Exacta track, the super, that's billions of dollars worldwide. This is one race everybody bets, whether they are a pro or just some newbie with $2 to spare. Everybody bets this race. So you got a whole lot of money changing hands once that tote board lights up. Remember, that horse who got DQ'd and pushed up, he was 26 to 1.
Yeah.
So just off the top,
that
horse would have paid $55. The Exacta with a 26 to 1 shot and a 13 to 1 shot, just doing rough math, is about $500 for a $2 bet. The triple would have paid somewhere between $5,000, and the superfecta would have been somewhere in the realm of between $20,000 and $25,000.
given the size mm-hmm. of the field.
Basically,
and that's
basically
serious money.
Mm-hmm. Basically, yeah. Michael, Jimmy the Finger would have had 6 or 7 fingers if he had if that had happened. On,
oh, yeah, even that Lady thing. Fingers would have got some of that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, 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 yeah, in a skinny minute. But, yeah, it's a hot little mess.
Mm-hmm.
And
so, Jenny, before we go to group questions, is there anything we can take away or should take away from this Triple Crown, anything that horse racing is doing wrong or right on the heels of all of this?
Oh, God. It's out of light to see it. Kind of like what they did last year.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's coming in equal. Yes. Everybody is going into each race on equal footing. Everybody's
mm-hmm.
pressing up. Everybody's ready to go. Everybody has some age and maturity on.
Yeah.
Okay. That in particular I really, really like. But like
that makes a big difference.
A sense of quality sat out the Belmont. I mean the Preakness.
Yep.
So
Preakness.
Now he's coming in fresh as opposed
mm-hmm.
to the others that have run all they're gonna be running all three.
Yes.
And that's something I've always disliked. If you're gonna be in the first one, then you need
you
to
be in all,
you need
I
to
agree.
Be
all
for
of them,
all
yeah.
three.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Barring mm-hmm. an injury, now if you scratch the second race, you're done. You don't come you should not be able to come back in the third race. You need to sit it out.
I agree. Yep, I agree.
Because to come in clean and fresh, that's not fair to the horses that have been running every
all year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
No, exactly.
Especially on this
exactly.
type of a running schedule.
The Rosie Ruiz method of horse racing.
There you go. Yes.
Yeah.
The Rosie Ruiz method. Anybody got any last questions for Jenny?
I'll do my standard.
Yeah.
You know, what's the weather supposed to be like? I'm guessing it's going to be hot and humid on Saturday.
Supposed to be hot,
that's
as far as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And
this one's supposed to be hot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, heat will have a factor.
Yeah.
Okay, they're saying there is. Let's see. Hold on. Da 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 da. Pick it up. Come on. Let's go. Okay.
I know it's supposed to be 74 around here tomorrow, so I'm guessing it's going to be like in the 80s, like it was last weekend.
It's getting warmer, yes. It's going to be
mm-hmm.
somewhere in that neighborhood, I think.
Okay, they're saying, looks like mainly dry weather.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No,
so that should
track.
Work.
Okay.
That should help. Now, hopefully
mm-hmm.
it doesn't get too hot because that will take a toll on them.
Oh, absolutely,
mm-hmm.
Especially when they're going down that last quarter.
Oh, yeah. Because they will be running completely. That's going to be like running at it. You got all that lactic acid buildup in your thighs, and they're just burning. That's what it's going to feel like.
That sounds like a trip on Friday night.
With less glitter, I hope, but that's a whole other story in and of itself.
She sounds like a $10,000 claim to there, Reggie. I'm telling you.
Hey, Mike.
Well, yes.
Mike, I have a technical question. And she sounds like she's smart enough to answer it. What's the deal with thoroughbreds with their front legs being so weak?
It's because it's not that the legs are weak. It's that their muscles are so developed that the muscles are stronger than the bones are at that particular age. Literally, their muscles are too strong for their bones sometimes, and that's what will cause the spiral fractures like what happened to 8 Bell and to Ruffian as well. And it's because they're right on that line of they're really, really young. They're barely 2 years old. Most horses are not – they don't start training and being ridden until 4 in every other breed. Thoroughbreds are the ones that are so young. They're half the age that quarter horses start at.
Yeah.
On
okay.
regular riding.
Is part of that due to the fact that, okay, a horse's age is determined based on January 1st rather than their actual date of birth? So they could be born in January and be in this year and be a year old. And they could be born in, say, October, November of this year and still be the same age.
That's
and that's
right.
why the breeders try to have their foals on the ground in January, to where they're born in the month of January, to try to get them that as much maturity as possible when it comes time to start racing them at 2 years old. You know, and you look at the you know, this would be like taking a two-year-old human and trying to get them to compete at a high school level in some cases. Because they're really immature mentally, and as well as physically. And just, you know, another year is all it takes to really change up to where the bones are really, really thick and strong, and you have fewer breakdowns.
Yep.
People have been talking about it for years. We will probably be talking about it for years to come.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing is really changing right now.
It's probably too much will, but... in the conversation.
Yeah, and they're also trying to hold on to the old traditions and stuff like that. Japan has taken on, you know, almost a surgical precision with it. And they've, you know, with the training and stuff, they seem to have really gotten an edge because they're not tied to the old traditions that we are.
I like that.
So
gentlemen.
It's almost looking like, you know, we kind of need to take a page out of their book and try to let go of some of those old traditions that ain't doing us no good. You know, we need to upgrade. We need to catch up.
So gentlemen, for betting purposes, this is what we got in mind. We believe at the start of the race, we're going to see the two-horse essential quality and the six-horse known agenda go to the front. They will be the speed in the race. Bourbonic and Overlook, the 1 and the 8, are the closers, and they'll be sitting back. Hot Rod Charlie should be stalking the pace as well, in addition to Rombauer, the number 3 horse. Now, when they get to the top and they swing out into that long stretch, this is where we should see Kendrick Carmouche and the 1 horse, Bourbonic, on the move. Now, Manny Franco is a local jockey who does really well in Belmont and Aqueduct, and he's got a Pletcher horse as well and overtook the 8 horse. So this could be a Pletcher triple if Known Agenda can hold up. You can't go too fast. If he goes anything faster than a 48.5, he's going to get cooked. This is one of those races where it's got to be a really tactical race. Your jockey has to be very clever. If he gets to a 50.5, this sets it up for the closers to come a running. And I think at the end, Carmouche, because he knows the track, I think he'll be there on time with Bourbonic. Overtook may be there for second, and Essential Quality may hang on for a piece. But right now, we like the 1, 3, 6, and 8. Those are the horses we're looking at.
1, 3, 6, and 8.
Yep.
All 1, 3, 6, 8. That's our triple box, and that's what we're sticking with it. Any last questions for Jenny?
Which one is a drug horse?
But the one that we do know for sure, well, we do know the one for sure that did test positive once is Medina, and he got kicked out, so to speak.
That's not fair.
I really kind of would have liked to see him run
to
see if he would have still placed in the top three again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about that. But that's going to be a question with no answer for me.
No shit. And a mile and a half is a mile and a half. I've walked that back stretch. That is I can see horses looking at that shit and getting tired just looking at it. So I know it's going to be.
And you'll notice the jockeys that are really on the top of their game. They don't wait until they hit that straightaway. They are making their moves just past the halfway mark of that turn. And they are slingshotting out of it and gaining speed at that point.
Exactly.
That's when you hit the gas and grab the next gear to be able to hit overdrive when you hit the straightaway.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
That's where they really, you'll see them start swinging wide. And let
straight
me tell you,
line,
they
speed.
Are really pushing with them hands.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a very competitive race.
Literally, Yeah, you'll see them literally take their hands and shove the horse's head and neck.
Yep.
Just to goose them and say, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember back in the day when they used to.
A lot of people don't see. They think it's all just the stick. And no, if you watch them, they literally, they've got their fists on either side of that neck and they're pushing, literally, to get them grabbing that next gear. And anybody that's ridden a horse and you do that, them horses love that shit. Because they find that other gear and it's all wind in your face.
Yeah.
And Mike, remember back in the day when they used to run the on the track, instead of starting at the curve, you started in the middle of on one side and went, they used to call the monkey corner on the back side. That's what that sounds like. I remember watching Secretariat run in his final race, and that was the thing that I noticed was that it looked like he hit another gear when he hit the backside and started around the curve.
That's right.
He dropped out of the
furlong.
Stuff out of the shop.
When he hit that finish line, you didn't see the other horses until he came around the
other side of the curve because the camera couldn't keep up with them and him.
Yeah,
exactly.
And when he
hit that finish line,
he was still gaining speed.
This is another great thing, though.
Yeah.
This is another great aspect, though, about some of the tracks across America. Belmont is known for the long backstretch. Santa Anita, although it's had some rough times, they are known for their six and a half furlong track because it goes from grass to turf. And as you come into the stretch, there's a chicane where horses, if you're at a certain angle, you got the momentum running downhill. And that's a big deal because it's the only track in North America where that setup is like that. And when the Breeders' Cup runs there, it's one of the most important races in the listed events that day because you not only have to negotiate your horse and the speed, you got to be able to hit that point where your horse can shotgun off that chicane and run downhill like hell for that last furlong or so before you get to the finish line.
That's knowing your shit and knowing when they hit, how and how hard to be able to get it across.
Hey, with Jenny, I'm letting you know that my Wizards and the Knicks have gone fishing. So, for what it's worth, oh well.
Hey, that's all you can do, man. We gone fishing.
Damn. Oh
man.
We joined the Boston Celtics. We all gone fishing.
Oh man.
Now don't take that ass whipping personal. I told you before. You can't be worried about that.
Yeah. Well, Brooks, you can save a seat for Randall and his buddies because the Hawks just put the Knicks out of their misery.
As Ray Charles used to say, it's crying time again. You're gonna leave me.
But the weirdest thing for me is I'm looking forward to the future because
I wish I could say that.
No matter what happened to this, and see, I tried to warn folks that people thought that this was going to be sort of a walkover, but the Hawks proved that they were the better team. They may have been the lower seed, but they were clearly they were the better team in this. But they've got some work to do. But for the first time in like forever, they have some building blocks to build around. And that's true.
You think Dominic can go to a restaurant and get a meal after the game?
You can come to the city. Atlanta will be a good push for Philly. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes about say six, possibly seven, because again, Trae Young's going to be a problem.
He's going to be a real problem. Yeah, big injury at the transition with Philly.
How about that? You know what, Jenny? I never did ask because I know you're a who that. How do you feel about basketball down in New York?
Who that?
Wait, say that again?
I know you're a who that, but how do you feel about basketball down there where you at in Orleans? Do you like basketball? Do you like the Pelicans?
I've never even watched them play. To be honest.
Yeah, well,
never
watched them play. She sound like the best.
That's one sport I didn't, that we never really, we never really got into that.
Hey, look, you're an expert on horses. No problem. Yeah, I learned more from you about horses than I knew the whole time.
All the fight.
Yeah.
But
your horses run, they don't gun.
Really but yeah, no.
Oh,
man,
that was funny. That was funny.
I couldn't tell you the first thing about it down here. And I know that they
horses,
do have a very big following,
horses.
Especially in New Orleans.
Yeah, but great job on them horses, though.
That's what she's here for.
I've been watching the horses, oh, my God, since I was a little bitty kid. That's
God
what I've always
you.
Watched, and I'm a Who Dat fan. Well,
Who Dat Nation.
Now that it looks like it's going to be Winston as QB this go-round, I'm not real thrilled.
Yeah, but you still got that side coach y'all got, Sean Payton. He'll find a way
to screw up his
quarterback.
Winston's attitude, it's Sean Payton.
I don't know.
And if he can't adjust that nasty attitude of his, he ain't going to do well because the team is going to take his ass out.
Who else can you depend on? I mean, the running back, quarterback, y'all can't depend on nobody else.
Well, we're gonna see what happens. We're gonna have to have Jenny back in time for some football.
You can get that bad man Aaron Rodgers. He said he like to come to Who Dat Nation. Go ahead and get that bad man Aaron Rodgers. I'm gonna stop some shit, man.
That's a two drink conversation.
Yes, sir.
No,
Aaron Rodgers would love to come play that there.
If there's no other questions, Jenny, remind everybody who you are and what your background is, your little pedigree. Bless your little Cajun heart.
I'm way down here in Lafayette, Louisiana. On the
God bless you. Be safe.
Yeah,
be safe down there with them redneck crackers. Be safe. And I'm being honest.
I keep my eyes peeled. If I see a Confederate flag, my happy little ass is gone. I clear the area. I do not look it around.
Yeah, especially man.
Well, I'm Cajun. The KKK don't like us. They try to run us out. They try to kill us all off and send us to Texas. We didn't follow. We hit out and stayed.
God bless you.
So, yeah, we keep it safe. We do have some racists here in the town, and they can be quite loud, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I keep my hands down.
Please be safe.
I stay out their way. You know, if I got a bite, I'll bite. That's all there is to it.
No,
you
be safe.
As they said,
yeah,
I whoop my
safe.
Ass, but you're going to know I've been there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sis, thank you as always. We'll see what we do. See if we're a genius for a couple of minutes on Saturday. Everybody, say goodbye to Jenny. See you later, sis.
Y'all have fun, guys.
Take care now.
Y'all too, guys.
Hey, Mike, I'm going to have to get the professor's help with this, man, because it's really painful to see Grady Brewer, the head basketball coach of the Morehouse men, made his transition to go to be his higher ancestor this past week. He really enjoyed playing against the CIAA, especially Union and the schools up north. So, hey, Professor, what you got on the coach of Morehouse, Professor?
Well, I'm about to see you guys because I really haven't. I heard he had passed a few days ago, and they talked about him a little bit on Dr. Cavill last night. It's sad because you're talking about he's one of those throwback kind of coaches. We lost coach in Liberty City a few weeks ago. And he was the last of the guys who came up under McClendon. Well, Brewer is like the second generation. In my family, they said, he's part of Gen 2. because I think he was like late 40s, early 50s maybe. But, you know, he was a Morehouse man.
Yeah.
He played there. He was an assistant there, and then he became a head coach there. And he had him in the running just about every year.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten to the men's basketball part of it yet. But, you know, it'll be sad to have to actually put it at the end of his career because, I mean, let's see, he was really just getting rolling, although he's been there for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of those guys that's very, 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 very – that was very, very, very good for HBCUs because I know one of the guys last night we talked about, he had played and coached at Tuskegee. But, you know, when you look at those guys like him, it's like we are with White Shadow and a few other guys around the CIAA. You know, we would for that hour and a half, 2 hours, we knocked the hell out of each other. But then at the end of the game, I will never forget, when they see the SIAC used to play in the same NCAA district with CIAA. I got to meet the guy that used to coach at Alabama A&M before they moved up. People like Jerry Johnson and a few others from the SIAC. Matter of fact, the guy that was at McAfee, who used to be at Morehouse, you know, and guys like that. You know, these guys were in solid programs, and he's going to be missed because you know I think his son was actually one of his players.
Yeah, yeah, his son's still there playing. Yeah, that's a bit of care for his son.
That's going to be rough on him, but it's going to be rough on. You know, these guys, his guys were very taxing, you know, and having gone through a whole year of this pandemic and so forth, there's, from what I can tell from other coaches and other players across the HBCU diaspora, you know, this has been a crazy year that not everybody made it too good because, hey, something you just can't explain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But his loss is a great loss.
63 years young. God bless him. 63.
Well, you know, Professor, as we remember, Coach, we got to also remember, and you as a historian, you know this, it has been now 100 years and a day since the events that transpired in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And a lot of folks want to make light about this, but I myself was infuriated by the fact that a lot of times I get teased because I wasn't from the South. But this bothers me no matter where you come from. Okay, you live in a town where you know infamy was laced all over you. You know, the town is burnt down. Black business owners, they had bus lines, they had railroads, they had a fucking airport. How many times, y'all, do people talk about how goods and services or lack thereof make or break your neighborhood? This was a thriving community, and it was taken away from them by a bunch of redneck motherfuckers who were so jealous of the fact that in spite of the situations put in front of them, Black people were persevering and thriving, and they couldn't stand to see that. That resentment got to them to such a degree that they needed the excuse of Becky being raped to justify their madness in pillaging a city and having it firebombed from the air. The first time bombs were thrown from the air on an American city by Americans.
Well, you know too much. It's the first time when Americans were put in concentration camps. They weren't the Jets.
Yeah.
It was the black folks.
Mm-hmm.
And also,
that's right.
Rosewood was the first to pay reparations about what they did to Rosewood. But nobody wants to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Rosewood Florida to pay reparations.
Well, okay, to be historically accurate, you can actually trace that back 2 years before Tulsa, because remember the Red Summer of
1919, when they came home. That's right.
And that, from
Laurie, Arkansas, and other places where they were race riots, simply because it was bad.
No,
Atlanta, Georgia.
Those were not race riots. Those were white riots.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And see,
that's right.
Yeah. See, that's all a part of telling the story and telling it right, because race riots realistically refers to race as in blacks, because that's where it came from.
Right.
Now, when it was white folks, it was just a bunch of good old boys having a little fun.
Louis,
in all these other places. And see, here in North Carolina, we actually had several areas that could qualify to some degree as a Black Wall Street. Because when I first went to Winston-Salem State in 71, we, black folks from the school, we were told there are two buses going to come by here. Don't get, I can't remember if it was green or gold, whatever it was. I think the black bus was gold, whatever color it was. They told us, ride that bus. Take you anywhere in town you want to go. And so that's what we did. 2 years later, the city bought out the black bus line, and incorporated into the city system. But then before the black, when the blacks were in charge, you didn't have to worry about buses being late. You didn't have about buses getting lost. There was a whole period of people that were good about that. And see, Winston-Salem was so cool. You know, it was built along the same model as Durham. Now, granted,
Professor, let's remember this, as our brother Eric Satterwhite's in the conversation. You know, he even took TV One late to the party to tell people the truth about the Wilson brothers, Ronnie, Robert, and Charlie, and the fact that the group they set up was an acronym for the streets that were the heart of the black neighborhood, the Greenwood District in Tulsa, Greenwood, Archer, and Pine, which is why the band is known as the Gap Band, and that the song, Early in the Morning, was talking about the riots. When they talked about finding another lover, no, they were talking about finding loved ones to make sure they were all right in the chaos that was ensuing out there in the streets. And that's where the lines come from, the early in the morning, the middle of the day, baby, late at night. Everything is going to be all right.
Right. Even the whole "you dropped the bomb on me" as well too.
That's right. Both
here we go.
Exactly. Yep. Oh shit! Got the bomb, dude. When I was in Vancouver covering the Grizzlies, David played this song to soup the crowd up, to get them to clap and get interested back into the spirit of the game and stuff. And Eric, I know you didn't see enough basketball to know how music is utilized to create the rhythm that gets the home crowd positive and back into the flow. Welcome, and please drop some light on what went down and how this is reflected even now.
Yeah, I hear you, brothers. Yeah, what's happening to the brothers? What's happening to the fellas? Always good to build with you. So when you look at Tulsa, a.k.a. Black Wall Street, right, you know, in terms of what it was called, it was a really thriving aristocratic community. And it was known for a fact that on a weekend, a dollar made – $1 put into the community. It could have started at the barbershop. It could have started at the tailor. It could have started at a convenience store. Wherever it may have been, that dollar would turn over like 50 times that one day. So that money was staying in that community. And so in the realm of what money is called, currency, meaning in the flow. You know, hey, I'm in the flow. You know, money's rolling. You know, all that means movement of transactions we still today. So as far as that was concerned, it was a really economic thriving community because that $1 would keep thriving and flowing, and it all stayed, quote unquote, in black hands. And with that being said, like you said, you know, the Gap Band, you know, being from the Greenwood area, you know, of that area, and then putting the music in a coded metaphorical way where people could just interpret it their way, but they didn't know the root of the song. That's the magic of music right there, really jamming to that portion. And it was always a well-kept secret, you know what I mean, in terms of, you know, what took place, like a lot of greatness that happened in that community. But a lot of those people, you know, from those areas were indigenous there, you know, because many times when you go to that flat plain area, that's where you have a lot of Native Americans who are in black skin. Right. So you wouldn't even know that, you know what I mean, that they were natives and they weren't reduced. Like, for example, you know, Coach McLendon's father, you know, who's from the Kansas, he was a Hiawatha Indian, you know, 100%. You see what I'm saying? Yeah, that was his father, you know, was, you know, Hiawatha, you know. And the thing is that, or his mother, I'm sorry, his mother was Hiawatha. And so the thing is that with that whole, you know, environment there, you have a lot of indigenous people, a lot of rooted people who went there. You know, your real cowboys, your real area, these real areas there. So these people didn't
real
spring
cowboys from, come from.
Yes, you got that right. They didn't just spring from the so-called, you know, slave paradigm completely. That's where the level of sophistication came in, and that's where these people, you know, the low-life, racist crackers who moved upon them, they didn't want to war with them. That's why they took eyes, because they knew they were dealing with warrior tribes and warrior clans. You see? And that brought in that brilliance. So those are the things that are not covered there, like what is the root there? And very few, there's a few cities in this country where when they track, you know, what do they call that? You know, when people, the diaspora, you know, when they leave certain regions and start repopulating certain areas, you know, they understand certain regions of the country where a lot of core people, like you were talking earlier about the sister, about, you know, DNA and horse breeding. Well, that happens with people where they track this shit. You know what I'm saying? And they kind of know what's flowing through. Detroit was another one of those cities. You know, what happened in the 60s when the National Guard rolled in. It just literally went to war in the black community, rolling tanks, you know, busting shots, you know. I mean, because they – and then that was like the root of the Motown era, right, where they were pulling a lot of people from that region. There was a genetic core and root. What it was in, you know, they know there's certain tribes of nations of greats that show up in these regions. And that was part of that process as well. So when you have that strength of attack – before it can go national, right, and other areas start following, or the people who set these societies up can start building out their own cities and replicating, you know, they dropped the bomb on them. And it's a tragic event. There's people who survived it. The ones who left, they had to hide out in the woods. They hunted them down any and everywhere. It was just mayhem that took place there. But the story's told, and you know, the saying rise and still I rise, but that took place in these soils, you know, right in the center of this country where what amber waves of grain, as they call it. You know, the amber is the
amber
brothers.
Waves of grain have blood spilled all in it.
Exactly. The amber is the brothers because, you know, when we get in the sun and that hue, we get amber.
Got that right. Gentlemen, what bothers me even more is the fact that, you know, history, his story of what's going to happen, they waited 100 years to decide that they're going to tell it. And we know if they get to tell it, it ain't getting told. So what do you do when you see a situation like this, if you're a local or you're familiar with what really should be said, who gets to say it and who are the gatekeepers to stop the real truth from coming out about what went down? My daughter just experienced a situation in Canada where bodies, indigenous bodies, were being dug up
right.
in Graves, Mark and Ship, it happened up there that, of course, a lot of Canadians really don't want to talk about. Now, we know the dead don't rest without redress, but it's another thing when you're going to tell the story of the dead and bury them again with misinformation. Can anybody help me?
Well, my solution is always we have to tell our own story, because
yes, sir.
One of the problems that we have as people is we don't know how great we are because we don't know how great we've been. You know,
mm-hmm.
when you look at the Greenwood area of
Tulsa.
Of Tulsa, guess where that name comes from? Tuskegee. And see, those are the kind of connections, because remember, black folks don't work together. Black folks can't work together. They backstabbing
mm-hmm.
all those other good things
yep.
each other to a point where, hey, they can't do nothing right. But then
mm-hmm.
You get situations like I just had today. I was on a conference call with some people, and they were talking about, well, you know, they needed examples of black first and all that kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
My question was, okay, can we start with HBCUs? Oh, sure. Well, I got a couple hundred names. Really? You have that many? You know, I wish I was talking to people who were white or real young and didn't know any better. But these were
mm-hmm.
people, you know, at least as old as anybody on this thread. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I know Gary fixed his age, but still, you know, those kind of people are still out there. And it's unfortunate just how much, because I was asked, for whatever reason, oh, had you ever heard of the Tulsa riot? I said, well, no, I heard of the Tulsa massacre. Why do you call it a massacre? Call it what it was. Because, see, I've talked to people who were there, and back in the 80s, I was at the NAACP convention, which was in 83. And I was
okay.
talking to people from Oklahoma who knew about it. And they were saying, well, they say there was, a couple of hundred to 300. They don't know how many people died because
it was in the thousands.
They took bulldozers and whatnot and dug holes and threw people.
Mass graves. Yeah, mass
mm-hmm.
graves.
Yep.
They're still looking for them, aren't they? They're still looking for a lot of these.
Exactly.
Graves,
they are.
I mean, they're finding bones out in the fields, this, that,
they're
and the other.
Finding all kinds of stuff. Well, see, what's crazy.
Yeah, keep it going, Fred.
But see, what's really crazy is one of the problems that, and I forget what highway runs through Tulsa, is probably 20 or 10 or 20, must be 20. But anyway, there's a highway. Back when they were digging for the highway back then, they didn't have the law the way it is now. So they just dug up, if they found bones and stuff, they just threw them in with the rest of the dirt and kept going. Well, now they would have to stop and do the archaeological dig and all those kind of things. But see, strategically, what's that word we like to use? Urban renewal.
Yeah.
They put a highway in, which became the red line.
We call it nigger renewal.
And they took the highway and put it through as the official red line. Put the powers that be on one side and cut the cut off the other side. And that's But even with all those things, Tulsa, to a degree, has grown back. I don't think it would ever become what it used to be, because we have the power of selection now. But you know, I love you know.
Well,
I love
well the soil. Yeah, the soil holds that richness. And what happened in those regions there that destroyed entirely those regions were when they opened it up well afterwards and created those dust storms. Right, because what happened when people from the east start buying land in Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, that whole area there, they start desertifying the soil by pulling up what was called buffalo grass, right? It looked like a weed that didn't serve any purpose because it fed buffaloes, right? But what that weed did, it was like the original form of fracking, because the weed, that buffalo grass, kept the soil rich. That's how the buffalo was fed and it was honored.
Mm-hmm.
These settlers came and dug it all up, and that created the Dust Bowl storms.
Yeah.
That desertified the land and destroyed everything in that region. And they still suffer from hurricanes, you know, in that and tornadoes on that flat land. That's where it whips up so much speed because of the desertification of that soil that took place. When that Dust Bowl hit from that region, I mean, that cloud storm went from that part of the country all the way to Arizona, and it just wiped out everything from livestock to homes to people, this, that, and the other. So if there was something about taking that rooted, natural, organic realm of people as well as Tulsa combined, and universal law brings the pain to those people who try to make wealth off it as well. And speaking to the word Tuskegee, Tuskegee is a Muskogee word that means warrior. So that's another native word that's used because these are some of our indigenous routes. That's why so many states within this United States is named after Native American countries, be it Minnesota, Utah, Iowa, Arizona, Tennessee, all these areas. And we can keep going on. There's many more, you know, Michigan. And so these are all tribal names that was there, but oftentimes, too, with that Lewis and Clark event that took place, expedition, there was the Washita tribe from where the sister was from, Louisiana, all the way up to Ohio.
That's right.
That is still natural.
Yep.
And it's ran by people that look like you and I. So, you know, and so in other words, all of that regional realm was another reason for that, because it was these types of brilliance and indigenous people that were able to do certain things like that. So, you know, when you had the brothers set up shop in Tuskegee, they literally set it up on a vortex of energy, like the mound people. You know, we see these mounds in Ohio that look like mini pyramids. Those spiritual forces, right? They're vortex. They're all throughout that region.
Yeah, in Wisconsin.
You know, they're all, exactly. They're all throughout those regions. And so Tuskegee, when Washington found it, he put it there. That's when George Washington Carver went there and was making his all his breakthroughs there. It's because he was sitting in that right apex level to get those energetics.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tulsa also was a place that sit in one of those energy nodes of this planet as well.
I love the metaphysics of it all, I tell you. But you know, no matter what we say and how we say it, they will always attempt to spin. And this is where the books come in. You know, we all grew up with distorted history books all through school because the places that made these books, their attitudes were more in line with a status quo and carrying on stereotypes than telling people the fucking truth. It will be interesting to see how this book gets published and other books from, let's just say, 2012 to present in terms of that gap of history. And because of it, these books will be distorting even more the plain truth because they look to deny black people their humanity.
But Mike, the sad thing about it, I remember when they talked about reparations when J.C. Watts was a representative from Oklahoma, and he was against it. And also the sad thing about it, you know, someone like James Clyburn, when people talk about reparations, first thing he says, well, we don't need to talk about that. Now, this is the same individual and members of the Russian Black Caucus, got to keep it 100, that when Maxine Waters was doing her little speech, all of a sudden they let her be the sacrificial lamb. See, when you have people out there that don't even want to fight to people who look like them, but yet when the gays and others and Asians come up and they got a problem, oh, we need to work together. But it, again, it was the state of Florida.
Yeah, that's true.
And the Rosewood was the only state that gave reparations for what happened in Rosewood.
Yep.
They're the only state.
Oh, yeah, don't
make
words in that, Reggie. That's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The model has already been, the model has already been made
in Oklahoma.
For Florida. So what's the hand stamp going on when you got the model ready for Florida? You can use that for the Tulsa, Oklahoma. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't rocket science. Go ahead and do it.
No, it's not. No, it's not. We got Patrick Farrar in the mix as well. Patrick, can you hear us?
What's
live
up, fam?
Hey, Patrick. What's up, fellas?
Hey, Patrick.
Isn't Langdon the oldest HBCU?
Oh, it's the top five, right? Langston is the oldest HBCU, right?
Yeah. And they're in Oklahoma.
They're like on the border of Oklahoma and Texas, are they not? Yes, they're near that panhandle, but they're the oldest. That's the name.
That consciousness has been coming out of that part of the realm for a minute.
Ironically, I believe that's the name of the NAIA conference that they plan. I think the Panhandle Conference or something like that.
There is a Panhandle Conference, or at least there was. But there's also now the Red River.
That region has a strong brother and sister native thing. But what happened was they were not classified as this typical, antebellum tribes of the South because they were natives there. And their hue was no different than you and I. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like the Seminoles, mm-hmm. right? Many of the Seminoles are brothers and sisters, black tribes. You see what I'm saying?
They came through there.
A lot of these universities located in these regions have that connection. I mean, how does it take rocket scientists using a word I just heard recently? I think it was Reg, to know what a Tar Heel is?
So how self-explanatory is that? That Seminole aspect is interesting because the Seminole Nation, of course, is in Florida, but they got kicked out of Florida because of the war. They left Florida, went through the South and through Oklahoma, then from Oklahoma and then went down to Texas, down to Mexico. They made that circle all the way down in there.
Yeah, I know brothers and sisters from the Seminole tribe, man. If you put them in so-called urban attire, you wouldn't classify them as Seminoles.
And so
that anti-Semitic, anti-Semite, semi-Semite, that's also coming out of that Seminole thing.
And you know something else about Seminoles? And I dated two Seminole women. Both had Seminoles. They're both built.
You
being a Kappa man, the pretty boy, I should have known.
I mean, you start pushing out towards like Wyoming, and you start pushing out to there. Then in certain regions, they're pushing down through Idaho, pushing down through Arizona. You got Nez Perce,
yeah,
and you got Shoshone tribes.
Yeah.
Now, brothers and sisters, I've been to powwows, invited to powwows.
Mm-hmm.
And our cultures, they're intertwined, like people just do not have a clue to.
Particularly
even the Hopi in Arizona and the Navajo tribes. And so what happens is these people know the indigenous. So there was a deeper vibe there about just wanting to start, on the Black Wall Street tip other than just some simple, brothers is prosperous, let's fuck their shit up. It's bloodlines like they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
People took the same sensitivities to bloodlines like people do with horse breeder shit. You don't think they don't track that shit?
Oh, man.
Of course they do. It would
drive people crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It would drive people crazy.
So they got fools nowadays, right? They got mofos nowadays taking a cotton swab and throwing it in the envelope and shit and then getting in front of Henry Louis Gates so they can, you're from the Congo. You like to watch black exploitation movies. Wow, sipping on scotch. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They want your DNA because it's changing. And there is a grail.
Are we watching trucks turn up tonight?
That people come into play. So these people take all this time and shit with DNA studies, take all this time and stuff, to all these tests. So we talked about maybe first you go to the Olympics and they got all these damn blood tests. My question is, what do they do with the fucking blood after they get it?
Yeah, well, really. Yeah.
They ain't throwing that shit away, Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
All those blood tests. I mean, where do they store the shit and what are they doing with it?
Please. Find a fast way to kill our black asses. That's the one thing. And take that.
You got the vampire Brooklyn running
Or.
You got Eddie Murphy vampire Brooklyn running
around. Or you just have, you have these codes and you can read and you can connect it to it. You can connect that and say, you know what, you are, you know, from, you know, this particular tribe, you know, that we thought we killed the fuck off and shit, and the remnant.
Yeah.
So these brothers that come up and do all these spectacular things, they don't give a damn about your religion. It's all about that line.
Yep.
You can believe what Martin Luther King can believe. He can eat more ham hocks and, you know, be as religious as he wants to be to his tenet of thought process. Don't matter. You can be a Muslim. Don't matter. It's where you're coming from in your intellect that they study, not your belief.
Chocolate
system.
Cream always rises to the top.
You know what I'm
there
saying?
You
can care less about all that other shit. It's like, you know, what do you stand on? You know what I'm saying? What's your M-E-T-L-L-E? You know, you can't break Mike Tyson. They tried. You can't break him.
Yep. No. That's exactly
you know
right.
I'm saying? Based on,
you know
that, that's the foundation he stands on from his DNA.
It's funny you mentioned Tyson because I remember an old video of an interview where he was being interviewed in Toronto, Canada. And the guy, the host was supposedly
black.
Oh,
I remember. Yeah, I've seen that.
And he tried to punk Mike.
Impossible.
Because he was talking about the rape case, which had nothing to do with why Mike was there in Toronto. And Mike, he went hardcore right off the bat. I said, look here, if it wasn't for the fact that you're on TV here, I would be whipping your ass. And then the guy backed the fuck up and goes, you're going too far.
I mean, dude lost 300 milli. I mean, you're not breaking him. I mean, Simone Biles, right?
Yeah.
Simone Biles. I mean, Simone Biles is, I mean, you know, if is on some whole other ish. And then right?
Mm-hmm.
And then some. And, you know, her mom was this poor lady from Belize.
Mm-hmm.
And she was raised from someone else, man. But that genetic core and what she's able to do and what she's able to process this through her brain, no one can touch that. I mean, they can't even come up with enough creations of what she's able to do. I mean, the woman literally flies.
Yes. Yes.
Literally.
Look how she's being treated as opposed to how they treated Nadia Comaneci. When she was supposedly the darling of the Olympics, oh, the perfect 10 and all this.
Simone gets nowhere near the shine. But you know what about Simone Biles, though? You have never seen an athlete like Simone Biles.
Never.
Ever.
Ever.
Male or female.
They got to question her, though. You know, they didn't say shit about Nadia, but when Simone came out there and rocked everybody's world, all they're doing is like, what the fuck can we do? You know, she's like
nothing but idolize the woman. I mean, she has so many millions of hits. There gets a point of greatness, real quick, G. There gets a point of greatness where it don't matter who gives a fuck what someone says. And she's at that level. So if I'm going to sit around and wait for one of these talking heads to get props, then I got to be on dope or dog food in 2021 because I don't even give a fuck. I can see what I can see.
Well, that's right.
Exactly.
She's on another level.
Her greatness is such they can't do nothing but shout her out and give all her different events, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They call it a Simone. She's naming the event as she completes them.
Yes.
And Mike, they've done the same thing
with Serena when Serena got the
That's right.
They did the same.
Guys. Bob, they changed the mound. Baseball changed the mound when Bob Gibson started dominating. You saw how the Masters had to go to a small M when Tiger got done with it. But see, again,
Tony, you know what they did, Tony? They said you couldn't dunk. When Lou Alcindor got in college basketball.
All he did was come up with the arguably the greatest offensive weapon, not only in basketball, but in professional sports. Think about that. He was supposed to be just another tall ass nigga.
That's right.
What he did was he said, okay, you're going to take this away from me? Good. I'll do like my ancestors. I will innovate the game. I will change the game.
Kareem is still getting down with his mind and writing books and doing shit. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is, Kareem ain't waiting for these motherfuckers to shout him out or their fucking opinion. That's weak shit.
Right.
I mean, I'm going to sit around here and wait for a talking head on Fox Sports to sign me the fuck off. That's who I am. Fuck that. That's weak.
Fuck that Putin. Noise.
That is some
exactly.
Toxic shit.
Exactly.
At some point, man, I'm sorry, man. That's some effeminate punk shit for me to have to sit around and wait for some guy to write a fucking article for me in the New York Times to get fucking kudo. I can see in a global world audience, I can look at a Simone Biles event one after the other, just do the most incredible, spectacular physical feats any human being can't even imagine, technically speaking.
Thank you.
And 10 million plus hits from the world. Yeah. And none of them 10 million people needed anyone to write some damn article in Time Magazine to support her effort.
While all the haters are as moist as a fucking Duncan Hines cake. And because of this, we see the excellence and the embracing of the athlete to the moment. And sadly, I want to change gears because we see an athlete that's struggling to change the moment because the moment's trying to change her. I'm talking about my little sister, Naomi Osaka, who came into the world, rocking the world. And Tony and I talked about this. When she was coming to the finals and nobody knew who she was, the bio said, oh, she's half Haitian and she's half Japanese. After she won that motherfucker, Naomi Osaka is a professional tennis player and she's representing Japan. Get the fuck out of here.
Mm-hmm. They will whitewash you. They will whitewash you in a minute if it serves their needs. But see, as she is finding out now, when they get tired of you, this is what they try to do. But see, what's going to wind up happening is, here's the thing. They're trying to give her the Serena
treatment. Yeah, because it worked on Serena. Yeah, that's right.
But see, here's the thing. She's a daughter of Serena. And again, it's bigger than that. Because see her and when she matures even more, Coco Gauff,
what is gonna do with Coco Gauff?
She's allowed to be a kid. She's gonna be okay.
Serena, how do you You can't define the Williams sisters, first of all.
Yeah,
they're out of Compton, California.
They play
tennis on crack, screwed, broken glasses in Compton, raised up on their father. Naomi's coming through the tennis circuit, and Serena had an example. Serena and her legacy and her history is so outdistanced anyone that they can't even comprehend her to this day. Like, how do you come about a Compton in that environment in Compton and gets it popping, man? I mean, it's shit that goes down. And you come out of that region, infestation, all the bullshit, and play this elitist sport to the best in the world. So Naomi and Coco, they grew up in the soccer environment, tennis environment. They were nurtured, but not Serena. I mean, they learned from their pops
in a park rec environment. So I always have to circle back to Serena and say, like, yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, Naomi's mother is Japanese, and yes, the Ainu tribes are the Japanese. Mm-hmm. We're black, too, so there is an indigenous connection there, too, as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a problem with, you know, our nations of Earth doing certain things and being participants. She wants to play for Team Japan. Fuck it. Go for it.
Come
you know what I mean? Because
I
mean, go for it. I mean,
there's a level of bullshit you don't have to put up with.
Tony, I'm going to answer me here, Tony. First of all, Cobos is playing with Venus and doubles right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the trick. Venus Williams said something today concerning situation.
Yes.
She said, the tennis media will not light a candle for me. Basically, she says, I know what she's going to, and you know what else she said? One of the reasons why they ain't going to light a candle for me because all these people asking questions can never be as good as I am. And, of course, they know what that mentality comes from.
That is correct.
That mentality comes from the fact that, like you said, they have people from Compton playing a game that someone in Boca Raton should be coming out of. That's the first factor. The second factor is the fact that Serena and how she looks does not fit the profile of how they want someone to look to be the queen of that sport.
Althea Gibson, you know, in the 50s, right? I mean, Althea Gibson came out of Harlem, USA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, she did.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, Althea Gibson was known as somebody that literally could fight like a dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Literally, and fought men and shit, you know, like tough, mm-hmm. you know, coming from that area. And she went there through all that racist bullshit and clown. So all these legacies, these SOBs can't define it. That's why in our cultures we had oral histories. That we weren't giving a fuck about who got it from people, and they don't really know these sciences. They still can't figure out how the Dogon tribe can look into the sky and see planets telescopes couldn't capture 5,000 years if they already knew they were there. And the Dogon ain't even thinking about trying to teach these MFs.
Yeah.
So why would we sit here and try to define our greatness when we know that's just a natural culture of itself? And how can someone who's outside of that culture ever be able to define it? They will not be able to define it.
They don't even know themselves.
Go at these levels, which is laughable.
Yeah, they don't even know themselves, let alone trying to find out about us.
How can you comprehend it and really acknowledge it when it's so outside your realm of understanding? That's the first thing people got to really understand. They just don't get it. Then you may have this one sage or two that comes through and can honestly do certain things. They're rare, but they do exist, and they can keep it 100 on the storyline and really document it for what it really is. I mean, how do you understand Jackie Robinson? I mean, you can't understand. Yeah. We can. I can.
Which leads to that pressure. Which leads to another issue, Tony. You know what that is? What Venus said in regards to Naomi's issue with her particular issue with mental health. Nobody said anything about Michael Phelps when he got his, but that's another story. Now, the point is, like we said a couple of weeks ago by people and reporters, and what a lot of white reporters are going through now, going out of their freaking mind, is the fact because of technology and money and podcast and The Athletic and the players
got their own voice.
Players got their own voice.
They have their own voice. Don't need your fucking opinion no more.
Exactly.
You don't have to sit around here and wait for Howard Cosell to confirm shit.
There you go. I mean, I tell you, the whole thing was, here's a perfect example. The thing with Kwame Brown. That's a discussion that went because of the fact that it went out and the players responded on their own basis. You can't define the comments. No matter what side you're on, they define it. And if
the reporter is not on those airplanes, in that locker room, at practice, that person knows exactly what's popping. And he can say, F your idolization and your go-along, get-along, kiss-ass bullshit.
Because you can get your locker room pass.
I mean, and nothing loathes me more than someone who gets a media pass and calls an athlete their boy who would have nothing to fucking do with them if they didn't have a media pass.
Exactly. And you come on the team,
he sees you as someone who could write a story that can make or break him. Contracts due. He may need you to write positivity. He brings you to his little inner circle. Now he's your boy. So, is that the reason you got a media pass? So you can be a groupie with a media pass, which ultimately what it turns out to be.
And to be honest with you, that's a man boy love society that's been going on way too long.
What was so funny is
when Screamin' A did his quote unquote retort.
That was the weakest shit known to man.
It was just, again, I'll say it before and I'll say it again. It's as predictable as an S.D. Jones match.
I mean, anybody can do a blooper tape. Do a blooper tape and outtakes on anyone. Backing out the garage every day, we'll find that one day you forgot to turn your brake light or some bullshit like that. There's always a blooper tape.
Absolutely.
And so that should be your rebuttal. Only shows that, you know, you are tap dancing and buck breaking. And if you don't like it, tough, because prove it. Just because you're a black face on media and because you had a little taste of HBCU, don't mean you get a pass when you just lambasting brothers 24-7.
And what's so sad is, look, when Screamin' A was at the top of his game, he was clearly emphasis on
I'm trying to figure out when.
There was a time when he was one of the best NBA beat writers out there. There was a time for that.
When he opened his fucking mouth, he exposed himself. When he was writing, he was decent.
Exactly.
When he opened his mouth, he fucked up.
And see, that's the difference. Because, see, here's the thing. The industry is still trying to catch up. And that's the major difference. If you look at public opinion,
which runs things these days, and let's talk about how public opinion runs things these days. Who the hell is Jake and Logan Paul?
But
because of that followership on social media, they can get in the ring with Mayweather and get paid. I'm not going to play the race card on that. I'm just saying from the standpoint of media. So if you look at streams that from the Kwame Brown thing, off the level of streams that are building off, and how almost they have hundreds of thousands of hits combined, it's millions of hits, which is more than the First Take audience, which the ratings are in the garbage can for First Take. Let's keep it 100. Yep. The ratings are trash.
There are test patterns that have higher ratings than them.
Correct. You're right. I mean, an F Troop rerun is getting more ratings at the same time slot as First Take.
But you know something? They don't care. You know why? Because
it's not about caring.
The reason why they have other platforms to complement them.
For the media ride alongs, the get alongs, and I'm not saying as you, Patrick. The reason why you have to address that statement with the blooper tape is because of the social media fallout you're paying
attention.
There you
go. That's what it
is. And there's billions of people numerically who are in favor of Brown's perspective.
Absolutely.
Outweigh anything that you're, and you got this super large platform called a TV network owned by Disney. But remember, you know, hey man, shit, David Slade Goliath. But in this case, Goliath is social media, and that little 2-hour set's got the people in those suits sitting in there in Bristol, like, yo, man, when do we cut our loss?
They fucked up.
And it's been a slow melodic death for quite a while because see again
correct.
You know Mike, like I told you.
Yep.
I knew the day that the mouse what's the phrase? Jumped the shark. When they came out with ESPN The Fragrance. That's when I knew, like,
No.
When they came out with a fragrance, I was like, you know.
Oh, man.
Exactly.
He blew a gasket today. He almost blew a gasket talking about the hiring of Brad Stevens to replace Danny Ainge.
Yes,
and then wondering why no black athletes are speaking up on why Brad Stevens got the job. He drew LeBron, came back in there to mix again, and walked off the set and stage because he's in isolationsville because brothers who are in these positions are boning him up and calling him out on his fucking bullshit.
Real.
And the ball place is Boston. Who is he Boston going to hire? Come on, stop. Please.
Is there any way that they can hire both Hubert Davis for both an NC job and the Boston job? Because you know,
if he thinks
you know,
his white wife,
you know,
yeah.
Well, see, that's what you have to ask first, of course. If he can do.
Now, Tony, here's the flip side about we said about the Hollywood Reporters being their boys.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of that is this: they're their boys until they do something that really reflects the enormity of what they do. And you know what that is? If they're out someplace and they can't get in, Clay can get in, he can't. Or if he gets in, he has the blonde that the writer wish he had on his own.
Come on.
That's
mm-hmm.
when they find out something that's missing.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
I know,
that's
you
right.
Know,
don't you know who I am? Don't you know who I am?
Don't you
know
who I am?
No, I don't. And no, do I care.
But when you play yourself, in general, as the voice of Black America, Black conscientiousness,
come on.
And all of a sudden you got a social media cavalcade of millions saying this motherfucker ain't shit.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Now all of a sudden, suits start saying, "Whoa, hold up now!
Mm-hmm.
Public opinion ain't riding with this shit."
Right. This is worse. This is beyond the Emperor's New Clothes. At this point, right now,
factual.
He's just
and they keep rolling it out week after week, day after day. And so years ago, what was that brother's name, man? That Josh Morgan, the football player that's always can't pass the drug test.
Yeah.
That's Gordon.
Is that his
Gordon.
Name, Josh Morgan?
Yeah, Josh Morgan. Mm-hmm.
No, Josh
and
Gordon.
I remember
Josh
years
Gordon.
Ago,
Josh
I know
Josh
Mike,
Gordon.
I can remember, being
with Gordon.
I think I know Mike, I believe G was involved, T-Mac may have been, I can't recall, I know for sure. We went in on this dude saying, get off the weed and talking about this brother, man, like, I mean, I was so, I had no firewall, I had to go in. Because I found that to be just heinous.
Well,
and hardcore and inflamed. Get off the weed! Just kept going in on the brother's thing. And the guy responded saying, man, I got issues, I got problems, I'm trying to fight this shit. I got a career, man. Why are you hammering me on this platform this way?
What's interesting, Eric, you talked about social media. There's a guy on social media who deals with stories. As a matter of fact, he's probably done the most fairest and the most eye-opening study of Gordon. His name is Flemlo Raps. And he has a forum.
Yeah.
He has a
I
forum
like
very similar. I love Flemlo because, see, he takes, he takes a story. Because, see, he has a series where he does Whatever Happened to So-and-So. And he actually did a two-part one on Josh Gordon. And it really delved, and what I liked about it is it wasn't the same cookie cutter bullshit that you see on the networks. He delved into his past, his present, and his future.
Deeper dive, yeah.
Exactly. And, mm-hmm. and it wasn't like one of these things that you see on the
surface
pregame shows.
Shit. Yeah, surface.
Where,
well.
Right.
And, you know, he's a former player. He played in HBCU as
right,
well.
Right, right, right.
But mm-hmm. the thing is, those are, you know, the Flemlo raps. There's a bunch of other guys that are out there on social media, whether it be YouTube or Motion.
Mm-hmm. They have great followers, great numbers behind them.
Exactly. And see, they put out quality stuff. And see,
yeah,
it,
exactly.
it go, you know,
grassroots
it back,
stuff.
It's, well, see, the thing is, every, you know, the biggest problem, and it's funny because I think what most sports fans, and it took them a while to realize it, places like, you know, like the all sports stations and the all sports whatevers, you know, they get by strictly on reputation. But if you really want to, get meat and potatoes with a lot of what's going on, you have to be involved in social media. Not so much involved, but you have to be aware of it. Because see, the thing that scares them the most about the Kwame Brown experience or whatever, they can't reproduce
control
it. They can't control it, and they can't reproduce it. They can't.
And on top of that, though, you are not in that bandwidth.
Yes.
You're not in that tribe.
Everything
you do is external.
Exactly.
This is someone that can talk about the person who drafted him at a level that another person, he goes in on him and says, listen, man, this motherfucker here, y'all be kissing his ass, but here's the 100 on that.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of people who know that, and there's a lot of people who know that to be true. And me, and knowing many people in that realm, you know, I know Matt Barnes personally, for example. So I'm not going to go in on any of the statements he made on Matt Barnes. I've known Matt Barnes since he was 14. Met his parents, know his brother. Gloria Govan, his ex-wife, the one with, you know, that's been in the drama stories. I met her when he first started dating her. You know, when I was coaching the pro development, working them out. I remember her pushing the twins, his small boys, this, that, and the other. So I have a little personal upfront with Matt and family. So I can't really speak to any of that process of what, you know, that conversation may have been. However, what I do know is that a lot of the dialogue in which some of these brothers share from my own experience, where I won't come in here and bash another brother on what I know, right? I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to come in here. Now, me and you want to, me and you at a local coffee shop, a story comes up, we can have that conversation as men.
Same way.
I'm not going to come on this where I can't control who's out there listening and start bashing and start smashing
on
another brother. Like
I think
some people do. You know what I'm saying? Like just go in on them arbitrarily. Like here's a brother just got suspended, man, again. And this guy is in this forum with this audience going off and extending the term of get off the weed. Man, it was like, we need to ride on this MF. This ain't cool.
And Mike, let me throw this in. In regards to what was saying, Eric was saying, let me extend that a little bit. Here in the East Coast, Tony, you would know who she is. Remember Karen Hunter, who used to work for the Daily News? She was the first black female reporter ever on in Daily News, which was monumental back then. And now she's spread herself out to now politics and other things. She said when she got on board with the paper, there's something that she discovered that exists now. What exists now is our conversation about opinions are being moved is because, quote from what she said the way they look, no matter what stories that she could put together or the rest of the sports reporters can put together, no matter how good it is, the people at the top says, well, sports writers are really not journalists. You know,
the journalists are in politics,
or in political views. Now, if that's the case, what sports people have done in recent years is try to get stories on the same model as the political reporters, the same kind of opinions, and because of sports, it flies a little better. But like we're saying, it goes in different directions that they don't know what to do with.
Exactly. And see, especially when it's coming from a black perspective, because see, the thing about it is they've always controlled, or should I say, they've always tried to control the narrative. Yeah. One of the things I do once a year, I have to admit, I've been doing it more so over the year. There is a DVD / movie called The Black Press, Soldiers Without Guns, basically, or Without Weapons. Mm. And I watch that every year. I try to watch that at least once a year to remind me of why I do what I do. Because, all of us here on this thread are on the shoulders of greatness. A phrase that Kareem talked about, and the thing about it is, it is incumbent upon us to keep up that torch.
It's an honor code, man.
Absolutely, mm-hmm.
honor code.
That's why. There's not going to be enough bacon fat when they fry Whitlock and Screamin' A's ass. Before long, because they have just so misrepresented and have pissed on the greatness of the people for them, and see, that's like it's like that old Queen Latifah phrase. It makes me want to go after them with a bat and a magnum, because they know exactly what they're doing. See, I don't buy into
Brad
the whole. Well, they don't know what they do. They know it.
Bullshit.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, they play us for stupid, right? And the thing is yep. that, okay, we may have a minority, effect. I mean, we can name drop. I mean, there's a lot of people we've seen in a social environment. I can speak to myself personally. Sure. I'm not gonna put mm-hmm. that shit on blast.
Exactly.
Because this person's human.
Oh, no,
flesh.
You don't do that.
Dude can take off from the foul line and shit and knock down a three in traffic, fading out of bounds for the game winner and this, mm-hmm. that, and the other. But can there be some things outside of that that are just human nature things that I'm not going to put on blast and start dogging them out mm-hmm. once the situation mm-hmm. doesn't work out a certain mm-hmm. kind of way?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that just
mm-hmm.
doesn't work that particular
mm-hmm.
way. And for you,
mm-hmm.
I mean, just to do a blooper film on a guy that hasn't played in 8 years is insane.
What was the name of that YouTube? What's it called? Black Press or what?
The Black Press. Soldiers. Soldiers without weapons. Soldiers without
mm-hmm.
guns.
Yeah.
It basically goes from pre. What was Frederick Douglass's the Northern Star?
It basically starts
like before that, and it brings it up to like about the 70s or so, about the time
mm-hmm.
when Max Robinson, was part of that three-headed team on ABC.
Yeah.
But it talks about the Sam.
Mm-hmm.
But see, it talks about the Mal Goods. It talks about the Sam
Mal
Lacy.
Good, yeah.
It talks about all those guys. Because, see,
mm-hmm.
my thing was, full disclosure, my last half of my senior year in high school, my whole thing was I was going to go do the military thing and try to find something else, and just trying to
mm-hmm.
find something from there. A friend of mine, a guy that I, hung out with high school and everything like that. He knew that I was into sports and everything like that. He just basically said,
mm-hmm.
why don't you become a sportscaster or sports writer? And like,
wisdom.
I'm like 18, 17.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
It's wisdom.
I didn't
know.
It just happened that year that Bryant Gumbel was basically the host the NCAA
mm-hmm.
Final Four, when NBC
mm-hmm.
did it back in the day. That was
mm-hmm.
the Bird Magic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had seen black sports writers and sports people on there, but when I watched Bryant Gumbel, it changed it all for me. I still, even all those years on NBC and all that stuff, Bryant Gumbel was a sportscaster as far as I'm concerned. Real sports to me is the best. Is the best sports show, bar none.
I agree.
Bar none.
I agree.
Well, I mean, and to your point, T Mac. I mean, a guy like Irv Cross.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, Irv Cross was like, you know, on that CBS
NFL Today.
Right. And Irv, I mean, Irv wasn't going to, you know, he wasn't coming off, you know, suave and debonair and nothing.
But
the
he played
was
game.
Just representative
exactly.
that he knew the game inside
exactly.
out.
And
he had a real good bearing about himself. And you listen to what he said and he talked the game.
One
no
of
one
the
talks
most,
about Brother Irv Cross today.
Yes.
Now, that was a broadcaster.
One of the most influential.
And then they brought in Jane Kennedy, and the game got totally flipped.
Oh, absolutely. One of the most influential people for me also was a New York-based reporter. And, Mike, I know once I say the name.
Oh, I know it is.
Exactly
we know.
About.
I know you know it.
Bob Teague.
Bob
Teague.
Yep. Bob Teague.
Brother,
Channel 4.
Brother, look. Yeah, brother looked like Bob Gibson, but he talked
yes.
like
yep.
Malcolm. And that's
well,
what
well,
I was
well,
like.
Well, if we're gonna keep, if we're gonna go down that route, my main man, Bill McCreary.
Yes.
Yeah, Bill
yes.
McCreary.
Yes.
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 And Gil Noble. Gil Noble, rest in power, brother.
Yes.
Gil Noble, rest in power forever. Ever.
Oh,
ladies
yes.
and gentlemen,
yes.
if you want to get some dynamic, culturalized,
yes.
organic,
yep.
down to earth, straight up black knowledge of the time frame.
Yeah.
Like
YouTube, the word Gil Noble, G-I-L Noble. You're going to love
yes.
it. Indeed.
Yes, yes,
Dr. Ben on TV.
Tell
yes.
it like
yes.
it is. Exactly.
Yes.
Tell
like
it,
it
like
is. Like
it
is.
Is was the name of the show.
Like it is.
My mother made
and
me watch is. That stuff every weekend.
Yes.
And
like
you
it.
Know what?
And then she didn't have to.
Exactly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
But see,
yeah.
But see, that's, but see, I say all that is that because, see, when I do what I'm doing, when we're all doing what we're doing,
I hear you.
We honor them.
Yes,
good,
yes,
bad,
thank
or
you
different.
For that.
We good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And
for
Tony, let me tell you something. Let me give a similar story, not mine, but one of the reasons that I maintain myself in the studio I'm in now, when I've had
yes, sir.
Several opportunities to leave that studio,
mm-hmm.
is the fact that there are young people who have no idea what
yes.
to do with their talent. Now,
yes.
well, not within my circle, to be in my program, you're selected. You just can't get in.
Right.
And it's made known that, like I said, they call me the husband of the Wicked Witch of the West. I don't give a damn. Because if the basis, I do that because if you can't be tough, you can't go in this business. That's the first part. And secondly is the fact that you got kids who can do this, but they have no idea, and particularly athletes. I got two guys that are graduating this year. One wants to be a basketball player who's average, but he has a gifted skill on editing. I'm going, boy, do you? And I gave him material from pro athletes, NFL athletes.
Mm-hmm.
You could put this. Do you know what you put on your audition reel? Ain't
mm-hmm.
nobody like you got this.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's great to play ball. It's great you want to play ball, but use this as Plan B, brother. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm gonna tell you now, if that was some white dude that had what I'm giving him, he's still in school.
Mm-hmm.
You see,
like,
because
Clint.
They see it.
Hey, Mike, I've said it for years. I had two goals in life. I was either going to be the next Bob Gibson, or
mm-hmm.
I was going to replace the fat guy from the Fifth Dimension. Now I can't say.
Where are you when we need you to have those fucking centerfold pictures
and
jazz?
Exactly. And I found out very early as a freshman in high school when I had the cycle. No, I didn't hit for the cycle. I was hit for the cycle.
So T-Mac, in honor of two-fifths of the Fifth Dimension, you don't have to be a star, baby, to be in my show.
If I can, hold up. I got to pull this back a little bit because I want to tell everybody that our little sister Naomi is not a victim. She's no weakling.
No,
she has
exactly.
negotiated with strength and wisdom a lot of shit that a lot of folks did not want her to process.
Mm-hmm.
There you
especially
go. There you go.
The self-hate thing with being multi-ethnic. And I'm saying this for the umpteenth time. It's multi-fucking-ethnic. There's one race, many ethnic groups. Don't give me this multiracial, triracial, biracial, interracial, intraracial. Shut the fuck up with that shit.
Yeah, we need Mike. We need Paul Mooney here to talk about race.
And to your point, Michael. To your point, Michael. When you put that stew mix together, something always dominates.
There you go.
Of course.
Sometimes the pepper may have a little more spice than the oregano and the thyme and all those other mixes combined because the percentages will lean towards pepper every single time.
Let me tell you how strong this woman is. She's strong enough to know that she has to pull the brakes on this because something's messing with her from outside forces. She don't have a wing person to cover her back. You know, and she's smarter than Tiger because when Tiger had somebody running with him, it was his father. When he lost his father, he lost his fucking mind. And, of course, people took advantage of him there. But the long and short of this here with this young lady is that she's wise enough to know, I'm going to do this my way. She's got a strong enough sense of self to walk up to the podium with an Ahmaud Arbery mask on or a George Floyd mask on. That makes everybody shut the fuck up, you know. She's not supposed to be like this. Even when
the smartest thing she's ever done, she never said that she was Kablan Asian or Kublai Khanian or anything.
She
doesn't have to define herself in any effing body.
Exactly.
She does not have to do that shit. And the people who are still trying to gene splice her, please wake up and mature.
Yeah.
Because
you're
gene splicing shit.
There's a real limitation in your
intellect.
Mm-hmm.
We can look at her physically and see how she moves. You know what dominates. And anyone with a basic mindset can tell what dominates, where the grace is coming from, what part of the genetic pool is making a lot of shit pop. Let's keep that real.
Yes.
You're making
it
happen and you're making it pop because there's a stream of a genetic pool that's activating that athleticism that is quite obvious where that's coming from. Then you have a smart mental game, and you're blending the two as well. Then physically and optically, when that sun hits you, there's no doubt of what pigmentation dominates. Those are just basics. That is not even no rocket science to that. But what she has figured out is her power is in her participation. So by not participating, she defeats the field and reduces the resources.
She is the anti-Serena. She's the anti-Serena because Serena, she summons her power, which leads to her tenacity. She already has power. Hold on. When she's watching film of Serena, when she grew up all that, she was able to emulate all of that because she was feeling Serena. She knew, this is how I win. She wins this way, that's how I'm going to win. She committed herself mentally and physically to this approach in play. It wasn't like Martina, who was a fat kid who all of a sudden got hard and wanted to play, or Steffi Graf, who thought she could out-athletic everybody because the others weren't much athletes to begin with. She is the ultimate, and her head has to stay right so that she can keep this place because she knows Serena has 20-odd Grand Slam titles, and she wants as many of them. She's a smiling assassin. When she comes to the podium with the shy, smiling shit, she's like, yeah, I whoop that ass, but I really don't want to talk about it because I want to keep this facade up so I can whip all you motherfuckers' asses some more. She may not riff like that, but if she did the Crip Walk, I would not be surprised after she won a crown.
That's what I was going to say. The Asian brother is very, very strong. And that brother...
Yes.
Yeah, tripping people up because they're not doing it because
she's very strategic. She's very discerning in terms of her mental approach.
and how she can work the angles to her benefit. And it's all built in the athleticism and the genetic core that leans towards athleticism, because she can have all those study tapes and realities. She doesn't have the physical gifts, though it won't matter.
Right.
She still have that physical gift component, which is what she does have. And so, you know, she's going to be fine on her own, but she ain't coming out of Compton, so she will not be cripping because it won't be legit.
No, but you know what? She's flowing chi when she's playing out there on that court. If you notice,
she knows
she's
how
not
to do that.
To
absolutely.
Make a lot of noise
absolutely.
Like that.
You're correct.
Yeah, she's flowing chi when she's out there.
I mean, yeah, I mean, she's gone feng shuiing like a mofo out there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's no
absolutely.
Disrespect. And that's
no disrespect.
You know, I mean, she's bringing that samurai game into the game, but staying stuck.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean.
And people can see that.
People who've been around the sport can see that, because I remember when Coach McLendon went to China, and he made an assessment.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say what it was at this time. Was you know to talk about it, but he shared to me in a dialogue at Elizabeth City State University. He said he just from China. And he gave me a diagnosis of how they would be able to participate at basketball level. And I tell you, what he shared with me is 100 to this day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And see, people forget the mental part of sport. Let's be honest. We see the finished product. But see, we don't know. Only a few of us really
mm-hmm.
know how the donuts are really made. And
mm-hmm.
that's the thing. People have gotten so caught up in what they see, but they don't realize the stuff that goes beyond that and behind that.
Absolutely.
And behind
the scouting
that.
Component, you know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
and what you're
True.
Speaking to, Tony, is, for example, and I'll use this just purely because, you know, I mean, I think all of us in what we speak to, we like the strategy of sports, because other than that, it's boring as hell to me if there's no strategy. I was like, this shit is old. What's the strategy here? You know, I mean, we can figure that out. And that's how those who know how to do that can do really well at sports betting at the same time, right? But the story is, like when Nowitzki was struggling in the playoffs, right? You know, Dirk Nowitzki when he was
mm-hmm.
with Dallas,
mm-hmm.
and he went back to his high school coach in Germany. So Cuban's got a staff of, you know, Patrick knows like 400 coaches, right? He's got like 400
mm-hmm.
coaches. He can only get so many on the bench by rule, but behind
really?
The scenes, he may have 40 coaches for his team on his payroll. But Nowitzki passed on all of them, went back to his high school coach, and his high school coach is doing computer studies of his form, measuring body warmth, history, where he's been at, his whole kinesiology, of the flow of his shot to develop the perfect shot. And he's showing him in front of the computer where he's off in his form, where he needs to tweak it. And this is where a guy like this person comes out of Germany and where they don't have no real hoop history and ends up as a top five all-NBA scorer. Because that
mm-hmm.
level of depth that goes into it, it's the same thing that's happening with these athletes. They're coming from a whole different plateau.
Mm-hmm.
And
of you know
that
something,
kind
you know,
of depth these days,
you know something,
to your point.
I was one who didn't understand some of the mechanics you're talking about when
mm-hmm.
I was with the Nets, but I got to understand it. I thought it was I kind of scraped upon a little bit before I left state. I only graduated, but I was running the school of the players. But now
right.
I fully understand that. The idea of a sports psychologist. Sports psychologist, brother, one,
correct.
It can be essential to your
meta
progress.
World peace.
I'm telling you.
That's mm-hmm. what flipped meta world peace.
That's
mm-hmm.
it.
That AKA Ron Artest. I mean, Ron's played for me, you know, in STDL play. I mean, I love it. Met his dad. Really, I mean, Ron's the bomb, right, if you know him. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Ron Artest is a down-earth brother. He's from Queensbridge.
Queensbridge,
trying to get out of Queensbridge, even though he's picked up sophistication along the way. Right? And what flipped him as a Laker was what you said, a sports psychologist.
Yeah. That was when he was up there thanking folks, the second person he said was the sports psychologist.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, Artest is out there on the beach with her family. They playing Bob Frisbee and shit
mm-hmm.
on Manhattan Beach
mm-hmm.
somewhere with this,
mm-hmm.
that, and the other.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, Meta, mm-hmm. or, you know, I got to respect his name as he's called these days, Meta, you know, I mean, he put hands on you.
You know, the slightest provocation. That Queensbridge mentality, you know, and he was on lithium when he was with the Bulls.
And again, you know, these guys again, and it's so important. Of course, the professional players had it. Now, college teams, if they're smart, and most of them are, particularly if they're making money from their team, have male or female, and know something else. I got to admit it too, because I hate to say it, that nutritionist.
Yes,
it's important too.
Sure.
It matters. I mean,
there's a perfect example
of a player that has just, you know, I mean, there's so many others, right? Kevin Love comes to mind. You see what Kevin Love used to look like at UCLA in Minnesota, right?
I saw him in high school.
Total transformation. And a kid that's ripping shit in half now. And where he really flipped onto the nutritionist thing is Devin Booker.
Oh, yes.
Of Phoenix, you know, because Devin has totally remade himself.
The person that should have done that and could have stayed in the league longer, but, again, he's like his mama's – he's too much of mama's boy, cooking. Remember Big Baby?
Hot Plate Williams and Stanley Roberts. Those guys literally ate themselves out the league.
And Brad Reeves too, with his big dumb ass.
Brad Reeves.
Big Baby.
I saw Big Baby when he was in Jersey at the old ABCD camp. I said, "Who was that Big Baby?"
I remember
but
that.
But you know. He was all American in football, and all American in basketball, and he made the choice to go basketball. But if he had cut his weight down, he'd have been a league longer.
He was literally a Brahma Bulls in tennis shoes.
Literally.
I mean, I seen him up close in Vegas in the Vegas Summer League, but you know what was interesting too? He never knew how to play physical. He had a finesse game and a big body. He could not mix it up at all, like a Danny Fortson, right? Because Danny Fortson was about a 6'5", 250 guy that could hit the glass. He was going to last long, but Fortson knew how to play physically. Big Baby, as strong as big as he was not a physical player at all.
Ralph Sampson, who thought he was Jerry West.
Yeah.
Ralph's an interesting brother, you know what I'm saying? But, Ralph's fascinating, too. No one knew what to do with Ralph because he literally was 7'4 with point guard skill.
Yeah, literally.
I mean, Ralph had that kind of finesse skills. It just took a toll on his knees, man. His knees were wild. I mean, barely walkable type knees.
That's something that needs to be written about down the road.
That's true. Think
about the history of the NBA of all these, like, Yao Ming's career ended prematurely because of knees.
Yeah.
We all know that Bill Walton's knees was related to
Namath's
knees.
His ankles.
Tony,
I'm going to
give you a name. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Tony, I'm going to give you a name. No, don't laugh at me. Say this. But believe me, it's as true as sure as I'm black and my sweet mom and Danny Heaven. The name Yinka Dare.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That boy, now, he got in the pro leagues. Unfortunately, I was there at the time. He was coached under John Calipari. I seen Yinka Dare in practice beat up. Way out, Rick Mahorn and Derek Coleman. Get in the game, he was frozen.
That goes back to the mental. Because physically,
his knees had some kind of degenerative problems, and he was never able to play like he should.
Wow. Now, he was one of those kids that played that got in the hoop late, right?
Yes, he did.
Because the same thing happened. Remember Greg Oden? Now, when Greg Oden was a freshman, I thought Greg Oden was 34 years old. Personally,
he had an old man's body. He had an old man's frame for real.
Greg Oden, he tells a funny one, right? Because he says that many people talked about how old he looked. And he said, they asked him one time, because, you know, the people who usually get joked on usually remember the best lines they heard. So they asked Oden one time, they said, you know, hey, Oden, you know, I know you hit these ages. What was the best one you ever heard? He said he was at Michigan, and a fan said to him, hey, Oden, how was World War II?
Well, you know what? It's too late to bring this up tonight, but that is a subject for next week, because we were going to talk about how the violence has spread, how it's gone from good-natured heckling to out-and-out disrespect, especially in the part of what happened in the Jazz over the last couple of years. So we're going to put that on tap for next week, but without a doubt, the attitude of these motherfuckers who think they're entitled to say what they want to these people when they're out there needs to definitely have a G-check, and we will
somebody
have it on the menu
smacked.
Next time.
Somebody
yes, indeed.
That's
right.
I tell you who said it best. Boss Scott said, he said, somebody going to be checking out the arena.
Yeah, That's
right.
See, that's that fallout.
Well, you know what?
See, that's
from
the woke NBA.
When it gets to a point where some drunk John Belushi wannabe thinks he can take on a 6'9", 250-pound brother,
ain't gonna work.
Then you know, like Don Meredith used to say, it's time to put out the lights because the motherfucking party is over.
The last time I seen something like that, the Indiana Pacers kicked the whole Pistons arena's ass.
That's right.
Yes.
They were mowing down fans like fucking Pac-Man.
I remember that motherfucker that stepped up.
I remember Jermaine O'Neal, he didn't get caught up in the hype, but he was peeing off and shit like fire.
Yes, he was. Mm-hmm. And remember, this started when some asshole threw a beer at Metta World Peace when he was stretching out. There would have been no shit if there wasn't any shit. That's right. Uh-huh. And it led to some serious shit. Because somebody would have gotten fucked the fuck up had this thing continued as long as it did. But having said that, we'll save that for next week. Now it's time for final thoughts. Some great food for thought. Reggie, lead us off with some good shit.
Reggie?
Reggie, where you at? Yep. Y'all getting a sandwich. All right. Patrick, you go ahead.
Guys, from a political perspective, you guys see what's going on in all these Republican-led states, changing laws, trying to change the culture of how the constituents are being pushed. The voting suppression laws in Texas and some southern states have led to this. The rumors, the embers are burning. And even in the state where I went to my beloved alma mater, Ohio State, guys, where if you teach black history or anything that has anything to do with the diaspora as relating to this country being racist, that they're going to stop teaching it. The embers are out now, and it's this. There were parents who have kids. I know two already. Whose parents have, who are well educated, well thought out, said, and their kids have been recruited, one in Pennsylvania and unfortunately one in Ohio, that if the school that they select is under that kind of curriculum that they can't learn by their own people, they ain't going there.
There you go.
I'm telling you, it's beginning to brew. Now, how far it goes, I'm not going to be for everybody, but there's going to be an athlete that says, or Alabama wants him. Or we can't keep up with. I ain't coming there.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
The South will rise again, but not without me. But you're going to do it without me.
Patrick Froth from JCE TV. Reggie, you back yet?
Chomp, 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 drink, 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 drink.
All right, Professor. Go right ahead, please.
Reggie, understand.
Since nobody brought this up, I'll bring it up now. Mike Krzyzewski said today that this is going to be his last year. Back.
Who?
Yep.
Wow.
Who?
Yep.
Who?
Yep. Next year. That's it.
Oh, I'm sorry. You meant K. I'm sorry, K. That's the wrong letter.
Hey, Fred, that's what happens when you miss the tournament last year.
How about that?
I like that.
Okay.
And it's real cute because the lady who just took over.
New athletic director, yeah.
She's multi-ethnic.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Her mother's very white. Her husband is very white. Her kids look real white, although their hair is actually curly. But anyway, you know, so quiet as it's kept, Coach K was okay, and I'll leave it at that. Anyway, back to something we were talking about earlier. You know, with Oklahoma and all this other stuff about the South. You know, we just got to chill out on story, fellas. I mean,
yes.
What is there left? Because, you know, to be honest, we can't wait for other people to tell the story they don't know, and
there you go.
they don't understand.
Part of it, you know, as we just talking about these different states. You know, and part of the problem is they don't know because they don't want to know. And just because they said we will fight back, they don't want us to know because there is this thing called Browning of America, which also means
world. What can Brown do for you?
It's been real good to me for almost 68 years,
okay.
So I'm clear.
That's what I'm talking about.
But it's the kind of thing we need to do. We got to keep telling our story. That's encouraging. I was encouraged today. I had a meeting with some people from Larnberg Institute, and bless their heart, I think they're finally seeing the light on some things, because it is the last school that was in from pre desegregation era. It is the last school in North and South Carolina really that is still in the hands of Black folks. And there's a lot they can do with it. It's just going to take some organization and some diligence, but you know, it can be done. So I've stepped up to help them some things historically, and come to find out, I started going through my directory, come to find out a lot of what we need I already got. So all I got to do is download and all those kind of good things. But anyway, you know, there's hope for. Yeah, I'm assuming it's like another HBCU because it was a prep school, but it is still doing some good things in the community. It's just we can't let it fall like we have let so many other schools and institutions fall in our community. And we will be posting some things shortly on Facebook and so forth, but you can also contact me at blackheritagereview.com. You can order books and other stuff there, too. We'll be putting up some more things on the 1st of July, and we're going to work our way hopefully into the football season. That's looking
there
good.
There you go.
Not too far from home.
Just around the corner. That's right.
Excuse me?
Go ahead, Patrick. Go ahead, Patrick.
Fred, I got to say, I just a rumor. I heard my boy is looking for you, Brother Sanders, because he was sending you comments, but that's another story.
Y'all gonna make Fred come out of retirement and want to nab somebody's ass. I know it. You know he's just sitting there waiting, saying, huh? Yeah, he's not even going to be in the line.
Why not? Hey, Mike, why not? You know Deion ain't going to tackle him, so, you know.
That's true.
Oh,
see, that's why Fred's going to wait to change possession.
Yes. Mike, all I'm going to say about that is this. He's already got his ass beat by one person from Fayetteville with the Winston-Salem State connection. He might want to rethink some things.
I heard that. Oh, substitution situations. Reggie, did you finish that damn sandwich?
Reggie gone, man.
Reggie,
Okay. Reggie got the itis. Reggie got the itis.
All right, got the itis. Sorry about that. Eric, if you would, please.
Yeah, sure. I mean, always a good discourse, you know, building with the brothers and, you know, bringing in different perspectives. And the thing is, you know, the history is so rich, you know, that we have in our experiences that it's so natural that until you start, you know, going through the chambers, you just don't even know it, you know, that because you have this hands-on experience. And that's something that, they, you know, in telling, you know, our story, an outsider never can do so. I mean, they can never understand or ever even come close to that bandwidth of knowing this, and nor should they, because when you look at, you know, mysteries of the universe, whatever it may be, people are still guessing what it is, right? So if you're part of that consortium, they're always going to guess who and what you are. We're not in this business to explain, you know, that portion to a person. I can recall a basketball executive being asked one time, you know, story, and he said, hey, my mind's not a library. You can't check it out when you want to. And that's
there
how it should be.
I mean, you know what?
I mean, that's how it should be. So we're never concerned with that. And, you know, when we start thinking about, you know, hollering at greatness and things that of what we've been able to accomplish and achieve and the fact that a lot of that's never been, you know, brought to public for. I mean, I always think about this, too, from time to time. Since we are in baseball season, and even though baseball has been watered down to the metaphysical game, it really still is. Because, I mean, if, you know, if we break down baseball metaphysics, bro, it could be mind-bending what I could drop on that one. So there's still something to the game. It's just not being, you know, brought out in a certain way. But, then, you know, it still comes down to the pitch, right? You know, getting that ball over
That's
the
right.
plate. And when it comes down to that, we know about, you know, Doc Gooden. You know, we talk about the great Leroy Satchel Paige. You know, we can talk about Bob Gibson. You know, the great J.R. Richard from years ago. You know, he's on staff with another brother named Don Gooden. Lee Smith was such a tremendous bullpen pitcher. I mean, I don't know if there's a better Mac name in the history of sports than Vida Blue.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what I'm saying? And so with all those greats, the guy that keeps just getting under that radar is Ferguson Jenkins.
Yeah.
Because Ferguson Jenkins has more strikeouts and wins than any of the names I've mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, he still is in the top 10. And I don't know when he last played of the all-time strikeout list. He's about a 6'5", 6'6", brother, predominantly
a basketball player,
throwing that jump over the mouth, and wore a big-ass fro under that Cub hat before it was
big-ass fro.
Yes, he did.
He wasn't wearing no fucking bald hair NBA-style shit or current media maven style to shave your head in submission to follow Roman protocol that you are a fucking tool of the matrix, but recycle. Back to Ferguson. So with Ferguson Jenkins, ladies and gentlemen out there, was a phenomenal pitcher. I mean, he went, you know what, 300 innings regularly per season.
One of the greatest pitchers ever.
And if there ever was someone ever not mentioned that, you know, what we like to highlight and do here has mentioned some of the greats of the past. Ferguson Jenkins, number 31, is a super all-time great baseball player, you know, for a number of years, who controlled the rock. He was on the mound, gets no love when they bring up his name because he was a finesse pitcher with power, one of the all-time win leaders, one of the all-time strikeout leaders, pitched a ton of games. Incredibly durable, one of the greatest baseball players of all time, Ferguson Jenkins.
That's right.
You're here.
Also, whatever him, he wasn't from the United States and Canada. That probably had a lot of
That's right.
And unfortunately, he didn't pitch in the major leagues. He pitched for the Cubs.
That's a great point too, because he pitched in a ton of day games.
Oh hell yeah!
He sure did.
Hell yeah.
Well, we're running.
See, that was good to hear.
He didn't have the luxury of those extra hours of TV games and that sleeping rest, but that's one guy that, for some reason, man, just don't get the love. Yeah, he could have been Canada, but, you know, we still do know all about, you know, a lot of the brothers from the diaspora who came from the Dominican Republic and other places as well that we know well, that we know a lot more about than, say, a cat like Fergie.
Yes, sir. Gentlemen, the clock is against us. G, throw something in the pot right quick.
All right, 15 years ago, Curtis Martin went up against the Supreme Court and won. Naomi Osaka got the same thing.
Yes.
The ADA is for people like Naomi Osaka. The ADA is for Curtis Martin. What Curtis Martin did was broke the mold for a disabled athlete. Naomi Osaka will continue this challenge. Grab a Cove on Saturday at 1 and the Music Box on Sunday at 4 Pacific 7 East.
Yes, sir. Again, we love our little sister Naomi. You're going to be all right, sis. We got your back. Tony?
Bob Brenly, in a statement, has basically said, During last night's game, I made a poor attempt at humor that was insensitive and wrong. I apologize to Marcus Stroman, and I have reached out directly to share those thoughts. I have had several conversations with the D-backs, and we agree that seeking sensitivity training is a important step so that I can continue to learn from my mistakes in order to be better in the future. Boy, that's an awful lot to just say.
Fuck you very much.
Yeah. Basically, it's like, damn it, they caught me on tape. Shit.
Good Lord. Yeah.
Well,
and Tony, against the first place match.
Oh Lord, you know we gotta close the show right with that alone. First place match.